Back.
All right, for the podcast.
This is the second file for the podcast. For people listening after the fact, we're sitting here with Lloyd Case. Colin Campbell just left a minute ago. I think he, I don't know where he went, but
I don't think he knows.
He's in
where
a better place
yeah.
now.
I thought so with his family at this difficult time.
Lloyd Case, frequent contributor, tested, board game aficionado, old school.
Just
nerd.
Old school.
I brought old school. You want to see old school?
Yeah, did you bring the Americrap?
No, older school than that.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. If you're just tuning in, this is the first time you're listening. We
I
are
brought
doing
Panzerblitz.
I have no idea what that is.
This is an Avalon Hill game from the era when Avalon Hill was not part of Hasbro.
You said six things.
Is Avalon Hill?
Yeah.
Avalon Hill.
Is that still going, Avalon
Hill?
No,
it's only a brand now.
Okay.
It's only a brand.
Okay,
although some of their old...
You got the close-up. This is a Panzerblitz. You're on.
Yep. Panzerblitz is an old-school war game. You know, hex-based, little chit counters... Combat results table, for those of you who may remember those.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
You move your little units next to each other, and then you look at compare the two sets of numbers, and you compare the odds, and you roll the dice, and it took forever to play the game.
Basically. Love the design of that box.
And,
it's very minimalist.
They tried to simulate like tank battles in World War II, right?
And okay.
That's
really
awesome. What else did you bring?
But I brought some other newer stuff.
I like that you get to play the Nazis in that one. They make good copy.
Gary, stop that. Stop it.
Don't lean into it.
There's a game that I dearly love, but a lot of people don't because it takes forever to play. It's a classic Ameritrash game. It's called Arkham Horror.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Oh, yeah, it's a popular game.
Yes, it's a Call of Cthulhu campaign in a little box, right?
It's a co-op game, right?
Yes, it's a co-op game. And it takes about, if you have 5 or 6 players, it'll take 5 or 6 hours to play.
That sounds
a lot of people.
Okay.
So,
and there's a massive amount of setup, too, right?
Yes. So Fantasy Flight came out with this game called Elder Sign, which is a dice-rolling version of Arkham Horror. Instead of a big board, you have little cards you lay out, and then are you familiar with the sort of push your luck concept of dice rolling games?
Yeah.
So that's what it is.
Well, hold on, you should explain it though.
So what you do is you roll some dice, and you get a result. And if your result doesn't,
is it better?
Are these regular dice or crazy D&D
dice? No, they're crazy dice.
Okay.
And if it doesn't beat the room, you know, you're trying to clear out this room.
Right.
If it doesn't beat the room, you remove a die and you roll again until you can't do it anymore. Or until you beat it.
Right.
So that's when you push your luck. You know, you're getting to the point where I've given up 3 of my dice, and it takes 3 dice to get this thing, and I've got 4 dice. Am I going to make it or not?
So you got one chance.
Right. The risk rolls.
Yeah. Yes. And then some of the dice, you know, the results may be more rare than the others because only one side of the die has that funny little symbol on it, that kind of stuff. So anyway, it's a fun game.
Okay.
It's also co-op.
And that's Cthulhu Mythos, right?
And you call these Ameritrash because they're pre the German board game revolution.
Not so much. The way I define Ameritrash games is it's a game that comes with – generally a larger rule set, but also a bunch of fiddly bits. Like,
you know,
10 sheets of cardboard things you have to punch out.
So like battle
all of which are different.
Stuff like that?
Yeah, or...
What about Agricola?
Agricola doesn't have that much stuff.
There's a lot of stuff.
Oh, have you ever seen the Sid Meier Civilization game?
No.
That's got a lot of stuff in it.
Okay.
I
think Agricola has a lot of stuff. So maybe,
or
you might
maybe the
a
more
lot of
classic Ameritrash game is Twilight Imperium. Have you ever seen that?
No.
So Twilight Imperium is it's think of it as Masters of Orion 2 on a board game format, right?
Oh, that sounds fun.
And you're laying out these tiles and exploring this universe, and each guy has a bunch of these little model spaceships, little plastic models, and a bunch of cards they have to manage, and a bunch of little cardboard you have to manage all that stuff, right? So
that sounds horrible.
Yes. Well, it's a 7-hour game.
Okay, so. So then, since like these games were really popular,
They're still popular, I guess.
But then the Germans got involved,
right? And of course, the one everybody remembers is Catan, Settlers of Catan, right? It wasn't the first one, really, but I think
Carcassonne.
Anyway, Settlers of Catan is the monopoly of Europe now. I mean, my daughter is in Berlin now, doing her semester abroad for her university, and she says every German household has Settlers of Catan. I mean, it's just the monopoly of Germany.
That sounds right.
And they all play it. I mean, it's not just I guess some play it, probably don't. It's like everybody has a Monopoly game, you don't always play it. By the way, speaking of which, Monopoly for a second to digress. Did you know that the rule that in Monopoly that almost nobody uses, that if you use that rule, it actually makes it a better game?
Yeah. What's that? Everyone's playing it wrong.
Is it mortgaging?
Yeah. No. Is this if you land on a piece of property and you decide not to buy it, it can go up for auction.
Yeah. Right. We always do the auction.
And almost nobody uses that rule. And it changes the flavor of the game entirely.
It only helps if there's more than 2 people playing.
Well, yes, that's true.
Otherwise, it just becomes a way to get stuff cheap. So the Germans came in, Catan,
right.
Carcassonne. There's a whole gaming competition, like an award show, basically.
Right, and it's called Spiel des Jahres, right?
Okay.
And in some respects, a lot of the sort of hardcore gaming community has kind of started to poo-poo Spiel des Jahres because over the years, their games have gotten simpler and simpler that have won the award. And in fact, this year's award, they've split it into two parts now. They have sort of what they call a hardcore gamer award and sort of the standard Spiel des Jahres game. And the standard award went to a game called Quirkle, which is a little color tile matching game, which is actually, strategically, it's kind of fun, but it's very, very simple to play.
Okay. So like a simplified Blockus or one of those kind of games? Or
Think of it as a cross between a color matching game and Scrabble.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's a fun game. It's very, you know.
It's easy to learn.
Yes.
Well,
it's also mind-bending because you have to, anyway.
The kind of hallmark of the German board games,
right.
Which is where I came in.
And then the flip side of the coin, and the hardcore game?
Okay.
Actually, isn't that, I brought it with me, actually, the one that won the hardcore award. Seven Wonders. I don't know if you've ever played this game.
I haven't played this. I've seen this. People have recommended it to me.
Yeah, this is hardcore?
Yeah, this is hardcore. It's actually a very simple game. You can play it in 45 minutes to seven people.
Yeah, but how long does it take to learn it? It
takes about 5 minutes to learn.
Why is it considered hardcore,
depends. If you have the expansion, it'll take you 15 minutes to learn because the expansion has a lot of stuff. But if you have the regular game, about 5 to 10 minutes.
So this is equivalent to like Carcassonne or...
Yeah, it's
Carcassonne's
it's
a relatively easy game
to
learn.
It's what's called a card drafting game. So you get a bunch of cards.
Okay.
And as you're building your hand, you pick a card, and then you pass the card to the next person. They pick it. So you never really know what you're getting. It's not like you're always playing from the same deck.
It's almost like spades or something like that.
A little bit, yeah. Okay. But you know, and then but you're building your little civilization. You have a board that has where you build a wonder, and it simplifies that whole civilization building ethos to a game that you can play in 45 minutes.
Oh, that's cool.
But strategically, it's very interesting.
And it's a lot of players for that.
Yes.
If you want to start playing this, let's go back to the beginning. If you want to start playing board games, because we talk about board games a fair amount on the podcast.
Right.
I mean, you tweet about board games a lot.
Yep.
Where's a good place to start?
Well, actually, the original Settlers is a good place to start because a lot of people know the game already and play it.
Yeah.
Another good game to start with is, what's it called? The Railroad Game.
Ticket to Ride.
Ticket to Ride is a good place to start.
Gary doesn't like Ticket to Ride.
I didn't like that.
Well,
you had a bad experience. You should give it
another seemed
try.
Like there were so many rules. I mean, it was my first time playing it. They kind of threw me in at the deep end, and it just felt like there were so many rules and
also,
things to
learn.
Also,
we were playing it live on the internet.
That was not a good way
to do it.
Mistakes
were made.
Well, you do need to sort of sit down and learn the game before you play it
well,
live.
This is the question I wanted to ask you. For people like me, who up until quite recently, their experience of board games was things like Pictionary and Monopoly and kind of the classic kind of Milton Bradley and Hasbro type games. And now there's this whole world of Dominion and Carcassonne and all these kind of interesting games. I was fortunate enough to have someone like Will that would teach me and kind of show me how to play. If you if you are someone that wants to get into these kind of games, what's the best way to start?
You just mentioned one that I think is a good. Well, you know, the best way to start is find somebody at a local game shop or maybe at meetup.com, find a little game group to go up and just hang out with them, right?
And meetup.com is a good way to find people in the real world.
Right.
Who want to play games. I know. It's horrible. Well, the other thing that's happened...
I just got to chill.
The other thing that's happened is a lot of these games are now available on either iPad or PC or iPhone or whatever.
Now, are they easier to learn in that format because they have
tutorials.
The rules and pop-ups and tutorials and things?
Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
They
can be. If the implementation is good, right?
Yeah.
A great game, for example, a great implementation is Ascension.
Ascension's brilliant on the iPad.
And the way they design it's actually a very simple board and card game as well, but on the iPad, they just made it so easy and streamlined.
Right. So if you have an iPad and access to games, would you recommend trying them out there first before going out and buying the board?
The other way to do it is on the web. You know, if you don't have an iPad or you go on the web to Brett Spielveld and some of the other online
just search for Play Dominion Online is how I always find it.
That's a good way to do it.
I don't speak German.
And you can start playing these games sometimes for free.
Yeah.
And you learn the games that way, and people will teach you, take the time to teach you. And
kind of the equivalent of like playing chess over the internet or something like that, but for a lot of the popular games.
And the cool thing is some of these games might take 30 minutes to set up, even though the games themselves are fairly simple. But, you know, on the web, they just auto-set up and all that kind of stuff.
So that's one of the things I'm excited. You know, Gina and Norm and I have played a bunch of Ascension on the iPad. I don't own the game in the real world at all.
Right.
But it's a deck-building game. So with deck-building games, there's oftentimes a lot of shuffling involved.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you're playing on the iPad, no shuffling.
I've noticed that. Like, we played the Penny Arcade, the board game, at PAX, which is basically kind of very similar to Dominion. But
It's a second-generation deck-building game.
Okay.
And, I mean, it's kind of fun. You've got a group around, and I guess it's all cool. But, like, you can spend 20 minutes just divvying up all the cards and getting ready to play. The setup can take a long time.
There's a game I like called Thunderstone. Right? Mm-hmm. It's a deck-building game.
I just bought that, but I haven't gotten to play it yet.
Setting it up isn't so bad. Putting it away
just because of so many cards.
Right. It's really hard to sort at the end.
Well, it's the same thing with Dominion. I mean, breaking down Dominion, we need to get Lloyd some water. Stat. Breaking down Dominion after a game, like, when you go to somebody's house and you're playing Dominion with them for the first time,
right,
like, people have very different ways that they put away that game. You know, some people put all of their cards on the piles as they're separating them out and figuring out where the points go. And there's the neat thing that I like about going to play the games is it's a really social experience.
And it's a very simple game to learn,
yeah,
to teach,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah. I mean, Gary,
well, so Dominion was kind of my gateway, yeah, drug into
that's
this
a
whole
good
world.
Gateway
and
game,
it's
actually
a really fun game. It's relatively easy to learn. Once you get it, once you get past that kind of click point, you go, yeah, I get it now. It's a ton of fun.
Right.
But there is a certain, again, I'm pretty stupid, but there is a certain learning curve, a little bit of a, it does help if you've got someone there that knows the game,
well,
to walk you through it.
The thing is, you can understand the basic mechanics of that game very easily, very quickly,
right,
but you don't kind of start to see the strategy until you've started to play three or four games,
right,
I think.
And then, there's a lot of depth.
And then, yeah, you think you get the strategy and some weird random set of cards comes out that completely blows away everything you know.
Yeah.
You learn all over again.
I mean, which is really fun because now there's, I think, six or seven expansions for,
right,
that game, and there's literally 500 or 600. So the way these deck building games work is you play with usually a type of currency, a type of point, and then there's cards that you build a deck out of that,
right,
do things.
You start with a base set of cards,
yeah,
typically, and then you grow that deck over time as you buy the decks and stuff like that.
And the win conditions can be different. In the Penny Arcade thing, it was defeat the last boss. In Dominion, it's run out of a certain type of cards.
Right.
In Ascension, I guess it's just you run out of victory points.
Victory points, right?
Yeah.
There's a shared pool of victory points, and once that's gone,
right. And you don't necessarily know. Sometimes it's obvious, but and other times in a close fought game, you don't necessarily know who's actually won until everyone's counted up their cards.
Right, yeah, because the cards also have victory points on them.
Yeah. Magazine in the chat actually points out that Kickstarter is a great place for board game aficionados because what's happening with this whole industry is that instead of a game publisher having to take a chance on an untried,
right,
game, people are designing their own games, because,
yes,
this is the neat thing. Like,
that's
the people,
right,
who are designing these games are, a lot of times, just dudes who like to play games.
Right.
And they're putting the game up on Kickstarter.
That's how Alien Frontiers got started.
Oh, really? I didn't, yeah, know that.
There's just a couple of guys. One guy who had an interesting idea for a game, he thought, oh, there's already a game like this. I forget the game that he was referring to. But then he looked at the game and says, no, it's not like that at all. This is the game I envisioned, and he invented Alien Frontiers, which is kind of neat.
Oh,
just based on my own experience, I would recommend Dominion as a good entry.
Dominion, yeah, I think Dominion's a great ticket to ride.
I love
that, so the way I would scale it is Dominion is a great starter game,
mm-hmm,
and it's a good game to just keep playing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a bad game.
There's no digital version of that yet, is there?
It's coming out later.
I would love an iPad version.
Yeah, right.
There's the iPhone helper assist that's you.
Right, but now I want
decks.
A full version,
yeah,
of the game,
yeah,
that,
right,
runs on iPad.
Well, the you can play it on the PC thing that Lloyd,
right,
was telling you.
Okay,
yeah. And then the next step up, I think, for it comes just about board games now, not the electronic versions, I think is Alien Frontiers, because it has a,
okay,
lot of the Euro game mechanics. But it's a very simple game to learn.
Okay.
And so, you know, you learn about things like placing, you know, it's called a worker placement game. But what does that mean? It means you're put your little dudes somewhere and they're doing stuff.
So like Agricola.
Right.
Is what,
right,
I think,
but it's much, much
game,
simpler than Agricola.
Yeah, Agricola is terrifyingly complex.
Right, right. And so it's kind of neat. And it also has a sort of Yahtzee mechanic that a lot of Americans understand, right, because they played it when they,
yeah,
were kids. And so, you know, that's a really interesting game, sort of the next level above a Dominion.
Now, the Germans are going to say that there's too much randomness involved in a game like that. Probably.
Well, they'll say that. Well, and then they say Settlers of Catan is not.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's, yeah, you still roll the die.
Yeah. Well, and you set up the tiles randomly, and those,
yeah,
little... Anyway, it can be very random.
Okay. So another great way to get into this, because the board games themselves can be kind of expensive. I mean,
right,
frequently they're $40, $50, $60.
Mm-hmm.
But if you... Almost every place has a small game shop now.
Right.
And most of those places have...
Nights,
yeah, tables, yeah, that you can go and just take a demo copy of the game, sit down, somebody will play with you. Like the game shop that actually just shut down by my house,
also one that shut down by my house too.
Well, it's the same one. Was the Thursday nights you could just go and there'd be 20 people there and you'd
right,
get pizza in or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently didn't work out that well for them. But I know I was talking to one of our friends, Andy Salisbury. He's found a place up in Seattle that's literally attached to a bar. So you go check out games from one side. And then go to the other side, drink beer, and play the game, and learn to play with a bunch of random people.
Right.
And it's a really fun social experience.
Right.
You can have a nice table.
And then the other thing I would pimp is local cons. They come out, typically, they'll come out three or four times a year, at least if you're in a metropolitan area. And you can go there, and what they'll have is you pay your $40 for the weekend or whatever, and what they'll have is a giant game library. You don't even have to like buy any games. You go in there, and you can check out a game from the game library or just hang out with some guys who are learning a game and learn it that way. And then you can say, this game sucks. I'm not going to buy it. Or I love this. I'm going to go to the store.
PAX is also a tremendous, only twice a year, but whether on the West Coast in Seattle in the fall or in the spring, the Boston PAX East. Right. Is a great way to you know, again, they have the lending libraries and you can play with people. And that's how we discovered.
That's my only regret from PAX this year, was that we didn't spend enough time.
We need to spend more time playing board games because they have a tremendous library.
The guys in my house, they do board games like once every 2 weeks now. And like we have like three tables set up.
Thanks for the invite, man.
But that's how we discovered the
Havoc host seat.
I like Havoc.
Sure you
do. I don't know where. One night we had a blow up because he yelled at me for being a bad medic. And there's this litany of horrors that's come up as a result. I like Havoc.
And PAX is how we discovered the Penny Arcade game, Gamers vs. Evil, which we love. Very similar to Dominion, so it was it has kind of a Penny Arcade skin on it. And you get to say fun things like, I play Scrotum, you know, because it's Penny Arcade type humor.
Right.
It's very easy to learn.
In fairness, we played it once, so it's difficult to say. But it seemed like it's very...
We had fun. The one game that we played, the fact that I won helped.
Yes, we did win.
I don't think it's out yet, but it's from Cryptozoic. They did a great job with it.
One piece of advice I would give to anybody who's learning games, especially if you're going to one of these cons, you play, but if you win your first play, don't run out and buy the game. What happens, I've discovered that you when you're, oh, it's really cool, I won, and you feel this really glowing feeling about it. And so you got, and you find out it's maybe not a very good game, or you don't like it.
I thought you were going to say they're secret agents. They want to sell the game, they lose on purpose the first time.
It's like lockpicking.
It's very conspiratorial.
Right?
It's like those guys who sold us lockpicking kits. It's so easy to pick locks.
You can have a beginner's luck.
Very obvious. When you have companies that are pimping their new games, they're very obvious about it. They wear little badges and they tell you that they're from the company. So it's. But you just feel really good about winning, so you want to go out and buy the game. So don't do that. I mean, play the game a couple times first.
Well, and it's a small community. There's a bunch of good sites on the net for finding out more information.
Right.
Your story highlighted a bunch from Board Game Geek is the place that I go.
Right. I think Board Game Geek is not the greatest place to go if you're a fairly new player trying to figure games out. Yeah. But it's a great resource to go to if you picked up a game and said, God, how do these rules work again? And they have.
Yeah, because that is the one place that, like, there's some games that I played. Especially some of the co-op stuff, like Last Night on Earth.
Right.
Like some of the rules are. I like precision in language. Sometimes you get a game, the rules are very imprecise.
Right.
And then you can go to someplace like Board Game Geek, and there will be clarifications on the rules.
Right.
And that's good to find out. You also find out about stuff like exclusive cards, like the thing that we could have gotten when we were at PAX and didn't know about. And stuff like that.
The other thing that I love that we saw at PAX, which shows like at the high end, if you really want to get into this stuff, those beautiful bespoke gaming tables that they have, the Geek Chic gaming tables.
Oh, yes, right.
Like $15,000 for this like walnut mahogany crazy table.
But you can get actually one that you use.
Beautiful.
They have a nice model that you can use as your dining room table.
That's right.
And then
it opens up.
It's like almost affordable, right?
Yeah, it's not like you have to be the 40-year-old virgin where your whole room is, your whole living room is given over to this massive gaming table. It can just be a regular dining table and then take the tablecloth off and it opens up and it's like a D&D table.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Pretty neat.
That's actually the one thing that I've always wanted to do and I've never done is play a real D&D game. Never done it.
Really?
Would you want to do it in like the, you know, with the big table, elaborate with all the sets and stuff, or just like couple guys around.
I would kind of want to recreate that Freaks and Geeks type experience.
With the hats?
Well, just sitting around. like James Franco is sitting there with the geeky kids, and he's Carlos the Dwarf.
So you're saying you only want to play D&D with James Franco?
You want to play D&D with James Franco?
I would do anything with James Franco.
Really? Tell us more.
He's so dreamy.
He's very good. I never had an old-fashioned D&D experience with like a dungeon master who's got the thing and he's telling the story. It just sounds like fun to me.
Right.
Never done that.
Rob Smith, I heard, is a very good DM.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe
Didn't
I'll see
he
if
succeed
we
succeed you at PC Gamer. Or was that?
He was one of many. He wasn't my immediate successor at PC Gamer.
Oh, okay.
Dan Morris was my immediate successor.
No, Rob Smith, was. And then
well, really see this is him. I don't care. Once I left, he gives
Rob
a shit.
Hired me. I never got to meet
you. Okay, so Rob, and then Dan.
Yep.
And then Wiedemann.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then Steinman.
No, Kristen.
Kristen. Then Steinman.
Yep.
And now Logan.
Fascinating
is that right?
content.
Wow. Yeah. How old have I? How many editors have you been through since I left? God, I feel old.
You should.
Old. Okay. I was the
At least the magazine you were editor of still exists, right?
That's true.
It's funny when we were at Norm's place recently. He had some old PC gamers I hadn't seen in a long time, and he had the editions right after we bought PC Gamer when I was the editor.
PC Games.
And I put so many obnoxious. What was it we put on there? PC Games.
We bought it so you don't have to.
That was great. And we had a Star Trek cover where we just said "Resistance is futile." now incorporating PC Games Magazine. We were very obnoxious back in the day because we were the number one magazine.
Star Trek games on the cover. Right. Wow. 7 of 9
very,
on the cover.
Very, very
remember
fortunate.
Those, and Computer Gamer World and PC Gamer were competitors, but yeah. Both magazines had, remember the Christmas issues are like 500 pages long? And
I was oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I started in the U.S. version. I originally started on the U.K. version of PC Gamer in 93, and then when I came out here in 96... 96, 97, 98 was like really kind of the salad right. days. Like the right. PC industry was booming. There were so many ads. You know, one of our Christmas issues was bigger than Vogue that month. I mean, right. it was ridiculous.
Wow, really?
458 pages.
It was nearly 500 pages.
Yeah, well, I remember getting a frantic call one sort of, I think it was September, from one of the editors at CGW saying, we got to fill 40 pages and we're out of content. And oh, can God. You write some stuff about hardware? And I said, well, I suppose. And then Mike Buxler and I got together and figured out what to do. But
and thus crazy. Began the hardware section.
Well, that was sort of the gestation of that.
And now PC Game is lucky when it breaks 100 pages.
Well,
not you know, simply because the market is, you know, not what it was. Having said that, I get this criticism all the time. Having left PC Game, I'm now seen as kind of like a traitor to my format. It's my thing.
Can you? Silent mode, that man?
It's my girlfriend telling me that the cleaners are coming on tomorrow at 9 a.m. That's vital information for me during a live podcast.
I totally needed to know that.
Yeah, I mean, people say, oh, do you think PC gaming is on the decline? I actually think if you go to Steam, then that's your answer.
We talked about this a few weeks ago with Brad.
PC gaming is more vibrant, I think, than it's ever been. It's just different kinds. It's you know, more interesting, smaller indie-type games where PC gaming is really interesting right now. Than you know, trying to compete with all the big console mega franchises.
Tell me about Thunderstone. I bought this right before Gina's Back went out, and we were planning on having people over, and now we've not been able to have the game night.
Right. So it's you know deck building game, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so what you do is you have this little board that you lay the cards. There's actually two sets of cards in the game, which once you figure that out, there's one set that's the dungeon, right? You build that before the game starts. And you build it randomly, just like you build those cards you're going to collect.
Okay. Right?
But once you build the dungeon deck, that's sort of fixed, and it just sits there and generates monsters on this board.
Oh, okay.
And then your objective is to build your deck up from the village. Right?
Okay.
And the village will randomize to some extent, and there's also a set of heroes that randomizes. And then you then sort of build your deck up so you can go into the dungeon and beat these monsters.
Okay.
So that's pretty much how it plays.
By the way, you have to choose each draw, right?
All the people that are sending me passive-aggressive messages about silencing my phone, particularly you cannot ask me to keep a timer on my phone and then ask me to turn the
alarm
timer.
Buzzes even if the phone's on silent.
Does it really?
Yes.
God, Apple is brilliant, isn't it? It's amazing, the features
Even if my phone is on silent,
oh my God,
the alarm will make noise
even if the phone is on silent.
That's magical.
Or at least it will vibrate all over the place.
That's delightful.
We'll know something's happening either way.
Okay.
I like that I wasn't the only one that sent you an asshole tweet.
No, I got multiple tweets, multiple messages. Not tweets, like actual text messages. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that cost you money, actually.
No, they were iMessages. Oh, thanks, iOS 5.
So, I'm excited to play Thunderstone. We're gonna have to have a night because everybody, like people, when we were talking about the Penny Arcade game at PAX, people immediately said, "Hey, you should try Ascension. Hey, you should try Thunderstone." Yeah.
Thunderstone is this weird blend between a co-op and a competitive game because you're not really playing against the other players. You're playing against the dungeon, right? But at the end, you sort of tally up your points and you compare them, and that's how you win.
So if the dungeon... Okay. Yeah. It makes sense.
What's your favorite game right now?
My favorite game right now? I would say my favorite game right now in terms of just getting people to play it is probably Seven Wonders because you can play it in a short period of time. You get lots of people into it.
Now, maybe explain to me why it's considered hardcore if you said you can learn it very quickly.
No, what I'm saying.
That's the point.
That's the point. Yeah. The Spiel of the Arts Hardcore Award went to Seven Wonders, which is a good game, but it's not really what I'd call a hardcore gamer's game.
Okay. When you look at hardcore, you're thinking of like Space Hulk and Arkham Horror, or maybe not even that.
Or maybe not even
something
that.
More mathy, like Agricola.
Even something like Agricola, Puerto Rico, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, like we said, a good way to get started if you want to try some stuff out. Ascension is a great game to learn this kind of
stuff
because
it's even simpler in some respects than Dominion is.
Yeah, the people who are really hardcore are going to say it's too random because of the way the monster, the cards you pull from work, but it's okay. We did an app of the day for it a few weeks ago. It's like $6, so you're not going to be able to try something cheaper. There's a great Ticket to Ride iPad app.
Yes, it's really cool, actually.
Like, it's fantastic. You can play constantly, basically.
Right.
Like, I literally, we'll sit and this is another thing that's great since James Back has been bad. We'll sit and play Ticket to Ride in the couch.
I did not love that game.
Yeah, another good
maybe
one
I didn't
start
have the best
digitally,
experience.
On the iPad that's also available as a board game is A Small World.
Oh, yeah. Small. Now, I don't know that I get Small World, because I have yet to successfully beat the AI in Small World.
Well, Small World is what's known, you know, here's back to jargon. We talked about worker placement games where you put your little dudes out, right? Yeah. Small World is called an area control game where you want to go. But it's a little different than a lot of those games because you want to expand out, and then the critical bit of strategy in Small World is, when do I retire my race and start my next one?
Yeah, that's the part I always mess up.
Yeah, that's the part. If you figure that part, you got to figure that part out, and you can win it.
So, by the way, just on Norm Medical Watch right now, many people in the chat are noticing that the Jimmy leg is well underway.
You do have the Jimmy leg.
You know what? You missed a bet. You should have had like a blood pressure cuff on.
We have a heart rate.
Yeah, we need something. Yeah. We need some kind of medical monitoring.
This is enormous.
96 beats per minute. That's way too high.
There are some concerns for your safety.
With a little thing that beep.
We have the one that'll measure his normal heart rate, and it's a bad idea. Bad idea, genes there, Chan.
You know what? I like Operation. That's a good game.
Gary, have you played Pandemic?
You need a very steady hand.
Oh, Gary loved Pandemic because there's opportunity to troll.
Pandemic. What happens in Pandemic?
Pandemic is this board game where you're basically a bunch of guys trying to stop a bunch of diseases.
You're the CDC.
It's cooperative.
Oh, that sounds like fun. I like this. Yeah. The premise.
The players play different members of the CDC with different abilities.
That's cool.
You can be the guy who moves people around.
I like the scenario. Is it actually a fun game?
Well, it's fun because there's a randomization factor to it because you populate the world with five different diseases, I think.
Uh-huh.
And the best part actually is when you get to name the diseases, they're different colors.
By the way, the thing about co-op games, co-op games is sort of this genre that sprung up in the last 5 years, I would say.
Okay.
It's become very popular, right? You instead of playing against each other, you're playing against sort of the game designer or the scenario or whatever. The problem with co-op games, and I love co-op games, it's sort of my favorite general type of genre, is that you can get in a situation with the wrong group of people where one guy sort of takes over and tells everybody what to do.
Yeah, I'm real bad about that. You shouldn't play co-op games with me because I'm kind of bossy.
And then when we lose,
it's all my fault.
Then you throw the hiss.
I would say that co-op games are more dependent on the quality of the group you're with than just about any other kind of game.
Yeah,
we got a tweet from Jeff Green, who will be a guest later on the show. Tell Lloyd that Jeff Green says Small World on iOS blows.
I want to talk to Jeff Green about this because, like I said, I played that game probably 24 times. Never, ever won.
Okay.
Not even come close. The other one that I've been playing lately that is a co-op game is Ghost Stories. And this is an iPad.
They have an iPad version of the Ghost Stories?
Well,
I didn't know that.
It's a little weird.
Oh, okay.
Because there's no multiplayer. It's literally like you play two of the sides of the board, two of the players.
Right.
So it's basically a single-player co-op game where you're playing two players.
It's basically a solitaire game is what you're saying.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
I've never played the board game version, but I quite like the game. I hope that they're going to add multiplayer to it so that there's more of a kind of... it is actually a co-op game.
Another interesting game that's sort of its own genre, although there are probably going to be a few more coming out like this, is called Tales of the Arabian Nights.
Okay.
And it's called a story... Remember the Choose Your Own Adventure books?
Yeah.
I love those.
So this is like a Choose Your Own Adventure group, except it's a multiplayer board game.
So
you have this board, and it's Tales of the Arabian Nights, literally, and you're moving these characters from the Arabian Nights around, and every time you go to a place, it triggers a story, and you go through this book, and it's got all the paragraphs.
There's actual literature.
There's a huge book that comes with it, yes.
Wow.
And you flip through, and you read the stories to each other, you know, and stuff happens to you, and it's really fun.
The Choose Your Own Adventure books are some of my happiest memories of childhood. I didn't have the official ones. I had the Indiana Jones ones that were called Find Your Fate.
And
they were a ripoff.
The best part...
And you played a character of like a little teenage kid who was Indiana Jones's helper, and you would go on these missions with him.
Short Round.
You were Short Round.
No, you weren't Short Round. You were a generic character, like some kid that he was hanging out
short
with
round?
For reasons unknown.
Right.
It's creepy, dude.
You weren't Short Round.
Did he have a van?
I don't think he had a van.
Do you remember the covers? The covers were my
favorite
part. Yeah,
the covers. Good art. Because
it was a series.
Covers.
I think the first one was called Shanghai or something.
What a wonderful idea those were.
And the best. I mean, they were easy to get through, but. Putting your fingers in.
Yeah, you'd have like five different spots when you ran out of fingers, you had to make some
I never
decisions.
Wanted to read the book eight times, get all possible endings, so you just put your fingers in and then get every possible ending and one through.
And then the other thing that they did really well with those books was they delved into topics that were of incredible interest to like an 8 or 9 or 10 year old.
You're a knight, the time travel.
No, no, like, the best one was like the Bermuda Triangle one.
Oh, yeah.
Where the cigar shaped UFOs came out and. Those things were fantastic. Right. I love those.
But anyway, Tales of the Arabian Nights, I really recommend it if you love those kind of books, and you know, it sort of puts it into a multiplayer gaming experience.
That sounds really cool.
Let me ask you, do you ever play like the cheesy old, like, do you ever play Pictionary and like, you know, Monopoly old fashioned games?
I have a few, not Monopoly so much, but I have a few party games that I play. What is it?
You play Dalmoody?
No.
Oh, Dan Amrick and his wife Kat introduced me to that. It is a fantastic game of bidding and status.
Right. Oh, by the way, speaking of which, some of the old school games, Risk. You know what Risk, right?
Risk, yeah. Mm.
Love
right.
Risk.
So Risk Love went Risk. Through this sort of revolution with a game called Risk 2310, which I think came back out 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
Kind of redefined the game, made it kind of more fun to play.
Faster, I hope?
Sort of. No, it has a fixed ending. It only runs for 5 turns, but it still takes like 3 or 4 hours.
Risk almost feels That's like fine. Kind of a like of a crossover game between the world of like right. Catan and those kind of hardcore games and the games that everybody knows.
No, but Risk is the best part of Risk is the long, like 5-6 hour sessions.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I mean,
the
I
worst
think
part
Seinfeld
of Risk is when the 6 hour session goes into 24 hours.
Risk 2210 was great because you could go to the moon, you could do stuff in the ocean. It was kind of and it had five turns and you were done at the end. They're coming out with a new one called Risk Legacy, and it's really creating a lot of controversy in the board gaming world because every time you play the game, you put permanent stickers on the board that changes and it has this really long campaign you can play as this board sort of evolves over time and
deformable terrain.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Deformable terrain and a
I think they kind of devalued the Risk brand though. Like when I was at PAX, I saw that they were selling like Transformers Risk and like they'll slap any old license.
Well, they've done that. It's like Monopoly. Yeah.
There's 50 million.
It's
kinds of
very
Monopoly
difficult to get the original Risk because they did a reissue. I think it was like a 40th anniversary, but the pieces were just squares, right? And I wanted like the original version where they're like actual soldiers.
The original version I thought had little oblongs. And
not the original, but the
one that Norm grew up with.
Yes.
I don't know if it really being considered a board game. It was certainly a tabletop game. I think it was from MB. Milton Bradley made it. I don't know if they ever had it here, but when I was a kid in England, I loved this game. It was called Downfall. Mm-mm. And it was kind of a plastic board, and you would sit on each side like Battleship, right?
Right. Okay.
And it was a tall thing, and you had these different dials, like safe cracker dials on either side, and you would put in each side. Like you and I would have our own set of colored tokens that would go in these little plastic chips. And as you turn, and each dial had a groove in it, like a clockwork mechanism that would allow the coin to drop into the next dial below it. And your job was to turn the dials and get your coins to the bottom. But you could also, when you turn the dials, you were turning the dials on the other side.
I've never played this.
And you could inadvertently make the other player's coins drop.
Right.
And it was like this kind of safe crack. It was so good. I don't know if they still make it.
It was
one of my
favorite. Tense.
I may have to go on eBay and find it because it was one of my favorite games when I was a kid.
Right. Okay. Time to bring out another game.
Hold on. I'm going to switch the camera. We're using all of our tools here. That's a cool box.
Quarriers. It's called Quarriers.
Is it about digging stuff out of the ground?
No. You're talking about deck building game? Okay. This is deck building, except that what you're collecting instead of cards are dice.
Oh, cool.
And they have customized dice for each of the little monsters and stuff like that.
So like zombie dice or something like that, but more complex?
More complex than that, yeah. Okay. But it's not a push-your-luck game. It's literally like the collectible or the deck building mechanic, except you're rolling dice instead of putting out cards.
Okay. That's fantastic. I had a question. Oh, the other thing you talked about in the column yesterday was tools to help
right.
with the games.
Right.
Because like the thing about Dominion, the worst part about Dominion, I complain about this, even though I never actually experienced it, because I used the iPhone app to randomize the
right.
from the moment I played the game. Yeah. But so in order to decide which of the 300 or so cards that are available to play with that you actually use in a game, you have this randomizer deck, and you shuffle them all together,
right.
and then you deal 10 cards out, and sometimes it's 10 good cards, and sometimes it's 10 crap cards, and there's all sorts of special rules depending on which expansions you're using. And
right.
Sometimes some expansions work better with others and some don't. And it's a really kind of complex thing.
Right.
But there's probably 5 iPhone apps that are out now that really simplify that. There's Android apps as well.
Okay.
How are you yawning, Chan?
I don't know. No, I'm telling you, Norm is not going to... Well, first of all, he was up all night boozing.
I was not up all night. I want the better reason, Lauer.
Uh-huh.
No, I'm telling you, Norm, though, the youngest and presumably in best physical shape of all of us, he's going to be the first one to drop.
You don't think so?
He's not going to make it.
Oh, yeah, he is.
All 24
That's what I'm saying. He is going to be the first to drop.
Nope.
He's already showing signs.
He's already looking tired.
No.
It's not you even, guys are talking not even, so much. It's barely
you guys
lunchtime.
Are going to burn out so quickly.
Well,
I'm pacing myself.
By the way, as an informal chat monitor, I will tell you that people really like Lloyd as a guest. They're enjoying
Lloyd as a guest, too. For any of our guests that might be coming, if they would bring a Choose Your Own Adventure book, if they have one anywhere...
That would be amazing. And also,
I totally forgot to do this, but I have computer tech Mad Libs.
Did you bring them?
Should we do one?
No, let's wait
till later hours.
We've got enough that we could have all of our guests do one. And
okay, let's do
fun.
One.
We can't have all of our guests because Colin's already gone.
Okay, Smarty. Absent a time machine, all of our guests from Lloyd onward could do a tech Mad Libs.
Let's do that with 5 minutes ago.
Okay. That'll be the last thing we have them do.
Okay. Right, but yeah, if any of our guests are coming, could bring a Choose Your
Own Adventure.
Also,
somebody would bring me a glass of water. That would be really
I would also love a glass of water.
Brad's on the case. I have a cup, Brad. Brad, you're a hero.
You can be on the camera. It's all good.
You're going to be on later. Don't be shy.
We're going to get a quick Brad Shoemaker glimpse. Oh, no. He's camera shy.
A ceramic mug. It's all good.
People will be happy to see you.
Nobody's going
to
judge you. People love you.
What the fuck?
Ice water. Cold. Great. Thank you, Brad. So yeah, the tools that help make everything work easier are really good, especially for games like Arkham Horror.
Right.
Even Dominion with the shuffling. Right. You can even one of the Dominion apps, because I'm kind of obsessive about apps. I just downloaded a new one that will actually do the randomization for the first couple of hands when you have to shuffle before you've added cards in.
Oh, okay.
So you know whether you have the 5 and the 3 or the 4 and the 4.
Okay.
Which I think is 4 and 2. There's basically 3 outcomes you can have on Dominion starting hands for the first 2 draws.
Right.
I find that a little bit much, but whatever. It seems good.
I'm excited to learn, thanks to the magic of the internet and followers and people listening, that Downfall does still exist, but in the UK. So I would have to import it from the UK, but it might be worth doing.
Amazon.co.uk, man.
Yeah.
You can get it there.
Got to import it.
Still free shipping.
Cheap
shipping.
Oh, okay. I was going to say that sounds crazy. So what else is going on? What else?
What's happening in the world of computers right now, Lloyd? You're on top of that world.
Sandy Bridge Extreme is coming soon.
Why is it extreme?
2011 pins in the socket.
That sounds like a lot.
That's a lot of pins.
So is that the replacement for 1366?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it's going to be the next 6-core thing for your desktop from Intel.
This is the point where you guys start to sound like the teachers from Peanuts.
Yeah.
Wah, 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 wah.
But it uses the actual Sandy Bridge architecture, not...
Okay.
The previous one.
But it's not going to be the integrated graphics Sandy Bridge. It's going to be
How many different sockets has Intel had?
Way too many. Although at least 1155 is going to stick around for a while. Ivy Bridge is going to be.
But I mean, 1156 seems like it's brand new still.
Yes,
I know. And then that was to replace 1366, which they said they wouldn't replace. Well, AMD is stuck with their same socket.
Right. But look at what AMD is putting into that socket.
Yeah. Oh, Brad Shoemaker.
Here comes Brad.
Hero.
I mean. Somebody tweeted me and said, you sounded like you're disappointed with the Bulldozer. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, it's a really cool and interesting ideas in Bulldozer architecturally, but it doesn't run applications.
What is Bulldozer?
Well. Bulldozer is AMD's new CPU.
Okay. So
is this their version of Sandy Bridge?
It's their successor to the Athlon 64 architecture.
So this is their APU.
No, this is not the APU.
Oh, this isn't APU.
This is just a processor. And what is interesting about it is that, so when they say they put in 8 cores, what they're really doing is putting in 1.5 times 4 cores. It's kind of weird because each core, they drop them in 2-core modules.
Okay.
Right? In terms of the semiconductor.
Oh, and are they sharing? Is it like...
And they're sharing some... It's more than hyper-threading, but they do share some resources, the 2 cores.
Oh, that's interesting.
But on single-threaded apps, programs, not very fast.
Yeah. And on multi-threaded apps, it barely beats a Core i5-2500.
Oh, that's unfortunate because that's a $250, less than
they're around the same price.
Yeah.
And that's what they're pricing it at because that's what it's about.
If someone were building a new PC tomorrow, would you recommend that they build it around an Intel or an AMD chip?
I would say I would build it around an Intel chip at this moment in time, yeah.
But 2500K is still...
Now, let me rephrase that. It depends on what they're doing. If they're going to be like this little entry-level compact home theater PC thing,
if you want
I would totally put in one of those mini ITX Fusion boards. Mm.
Oh, then you have literally, like, it's a board this big.
Right.
This CPU, GPU are all on the chip.
Right.
It has H.264 code.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that is a...
What if I'm building a gaming rig?
If I'm building a gaming rig, I'd build a Core i7 or Core i5 right now.
And do you think it's worth... I mean, at MaxPC, we advocated 1366 because for a long time, 1366 was the fastest thing out there.
Right.
In the Sandy Bridge era, unless you specifically need a whole boatload of threads... It seems like you're better off with like a 2500K.
That's right.
And overclocking.
Right. Or if you really need a lot of threads, a 2600. Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
But that Sandy Bridge Extreme will change that. So. Yes, new motherboards again. Yay, everybody.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Four memory channels.
Oh, 4 instead of 3.
Yeah.
Wow. So that means you have to buy 4 sticks of RAM all of a sudden.
Right. But have you seen how cheap memory is?
It doesn't matter. That's true.
I just upgraded my gaming PC, which is, as you remember, we built with only 2 gigs of RAM.
Well, we built it with 4, and then
I take it back. I mistake. We built it with 4, and I did a little health check coming into the holiday game.
That was when you're having the problems with memory, right?
Well, I got that fixed pretty quickly. We just had a bad stick. We fixed it.
But he didn't put the second stick in all the way.
Because there are some big games coming up this holiday, like Battlefield 3, you want your system to be as kind of ready for the big games as possible, that I did a little check, and I kind of felt like the only bottleneck was maybe the 4 gigs of RAM. So I went on Newegg and got 2 more two four sticks, two sticks of four.
Eight gigs of memory.
For 8 gigs.
Yeah.
And it was this awesome, you showed me your link, you know, it's awesome kind of, these RAM sticks now look like fucking Romulan warbirds. They're crazy.
Right. The heat sinks are all red ones and the
crazy
black ones
metallic
and the blue.
Colors. Yeah, right. It's, you know, even the RAM is, I guess for people that totally want to pimp out their machines,
well,
even the RAM has to be awesome, right?
Yeah. If you have a window.
Yeah, you have one of those lit neon type fusion machines.
Right. Well, okay.
But it was $50 for 8 gigs
That's
of RAM.
Right.
Insane.
And Corsair just announced a 32 gig kit. Consists of 4 8-gig modules.
Wow!
Yeah.
Wow! I was thinking about moving to 12 on my desktop machine because it's a 1366 machine.
That's what I've been running for a while now.
But I don't know that the 6 even matters. Like I'm not hitting the 6 on anything.
If you're not running something like Premiere Pro, then it probably doesn't.
Yeah. So let's take a moment to check in with where we're at with donations. We're at over $12,000.
We just passed $12,000.
How are you feeling?
Which is very nice.
Feeling good about that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So if you want to know how to donate, tested.com/donate.
I think the $12,000 is the only thing Norm is feeling good about right now.
Do you want the jerky? You can yell for Perry to get the jerky.
Do we have paddles?
No.
Paddles?
Clear.
They may come in handy.
Pizza peel.
Yeah, just get some exposed wiring. Just jam him in his ears.
Yeah, that worked in Something About Mary, right?
Yeah.
More than $12,000 on
$12,109 is what I'm seeing right now.
That's awesome. Thank you
it's
guys
incredible.
So much. We have more on the Tested store, on the Whiskey Media store. We'll tally that up
and
later on.
We're barely 3 hours into this 24-hour madness.
Not even an eighth.
That's what I said. Barely 3 hours in. Tested.com/donate
exactly
is where you go.
The charity is Child's Play.
Yeah, and so, they do wonderful things.
Yeah,
do you know about Child's Play, Lloyd?
Yep.
Of course.
Yep.
You know, Will, you've previously
as soon as Will
won
said,
money
me.
For Child's Play.
Yeah, I won the PC building contest at CES 1 year, and then this was back when you still chose the charity you wanted to support.
That's right.
Gave $25,000 to Child. They gave Tiger Direct gave $25,000 to Child's Play, which I thought was really awesome.
That's awesome.
And this was started at Penny Arcade, guys. I don't want to rehash too much, but we're going to check in occasionally for people who are just joining us.
So the guys at Penny Arcade started Child's Play
6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
They've raised $7 million. Basically, they buy toys and books and video games and movies and stuff for kids who are in children's hospitals around the world.
Yep.
So that they have something to entertain themselves when they're at their lowest.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing charity. They do a lot of events throughout the year. I just played in a charity golf tournament
that was before E3, right?
Before E3, I got to play golf with Will Wheaton, which was pretty amazing.
Wow.
I enjoyed that. It was one of the geekier moments of my life. I actually got to sit he was driving the golf cart. I actually got to say engage.
Really?
Or 1/4 impulse. I think I said 1/4 impulse. And
how many times did you do that before he was like, dude?
I actually asked permission to do it because I didn't want to.
It's kind of weird. Can I tell you?
Well, what happened was we were switching off driving. Because the golf cart's just fun to drive, right?
Oh, yeah.
So he drove the front nine, I drove the back nine. And as we finished with the ninth hole, we were switching over. I said, oh my God, I can't believe that I blew the opportunity to say to you like 1/4 impulse or some shit. And he goes, I'll just get back in the cart and we'll do it right now. So we did it. So he was a good sport.
You want to hear a Star Trek bit of trivia that's
also
board game related?
Yes.
Always.
So there's this new game from WizKids called Star Trek Fleet Captains.
Well, you brought it in last time you were in.
Yeah.
No, this is different.
Oh, wow.
Different game. Star Trek Fleet Captains, 24 starship miniatures, right? 12 Klingon,
wow.
12. It's a $100 game retail.
Wow.
Okay.
So,
are they like pewter or plastic?
They're plastic.
Okay.
Are they as good as the Hallmark ones? Or?
I would say, yeah, they're smaller,
ooh,
but the quality of the miniatures, except that they've had problems with things like the miniatures. But they didn't build the shipping case very well.
Oh,
yeah, right.
Okay.
So
what else is good about the game?
Anyway, the trivia of the game, most of the characters from all the different Star Trek shows are in there, right? Except no 7 of 9.
Really?
No,
you couldn't get
Jira
Ryan's like this?
I think that's probably it, because she's still a very active TV.
Yeah.
Right.
So
and all the rest of them
I don't know if you call her
very
active.
More active than most.
She is. She's one of the leads in Body of Proof.
Yeah, she's on a hit show.
Body of Proof?
Yeah, it's a hit ABC show about a sassy forensic examiner.
Wasn't she also in that Mortal Kombat? She was Sonya Blade?
Drama,
yeah.
Right?
What?
Wasn't she like Sonya Blade in that Mortal Kombat?
She was, which they're now making into a legit movie.
Yeah. Is that going to happen? Really?
Well,
that's awesome.
She was on she had a little cameo on 2.5 Men.
Speaking of random
more active than most.
Have you guys seen that, the Captain's documentary that Shatner did?
No.
He interviewed all the captains of Star Trek because they have a bond. Being a captain is...
It's a very select group. There's only like six of you, or five of you.
But it's really interesting.
Well, others,
if you include
Alan Ruck and Kelsey Grammer, could technically get in there, right?
True, but it's like starring captains, including
Sulu
Chris
could
Pine.
Be in there.
He armed
Sulu.
Chris,
Sulu would
Chris Pine.
Most definitely count.
Sulu was not in there. I think they have
a captain.
You have to be the captain of a whole series, right? In order to get on that list.
He did actually interview.
Does Sisko count since he didn't go anywhere?
What's like a Cisco totally. The best part of that whole video was the Cisco encounter.
Did Shatner troll Cisco?
Well, Shatner obviously his personality is bigger than.
Yeah, he's the best captain. It's clear.
He must be. It was all very about him. Cisco would have none of it. Avery Brooks just like
owned him.
No, he just didn't care.
He was a serious actor.
Yeah, he wasn't taking it seriously at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shatner took it way too seriously.
Of course.
It's a good documentary to watch. It's on Netflix. Okay.
As you know, we've done these live-streamed viewing marathons for TNG and Voyager. Now that DS9 is on Instant Netflix, man, do we want to complete the trilogy and do a viewing marathon? How do you feel about that?
A DS9?
I never watched DS9.
Okay, so with DS9, I proposed... since it's the most serial of the shows.
Yeah.
Instead of doing 8 episodes in one Sunday, to span it over possibly 3 or 4 weeks.
I almost think the thing to do is to assign some homework.
No, don't fuck that.
I think some of the boring early seasons, you say, hey, go watch these on your own.
I didn't quit a job because it worked for you just to do homework. Even if it's watching DS9. So I was thinking...
I'm saying you should assign the homework to me. You've already seen the episodes.
Possibly, if it was 4 weeks, maybe 2 seasons per week, 4 episodes. And then leading up to the – because it's 7 seasons, then the last week would be 8 episodes from the 7th season. Or maybe 3 weeks, then, because the first couple seasons aren't that exciting.
I think we have to – yeah. I mean, if I had my druthers, we'd only watch Dominion War stuff onward. Because that's when the show
The pew-pew does start.
That's when it gets awesome.
There's a lot of
pew-pew. Because what I saw of DS9 was a lot of – not a lot of pew-pew.
Yeah, that works.
There's a camera.
A lot of talking.
Do you like not a lot of talking in your science fiction movies?
No,
you don't like interstellar diplomacy?
I do like interstellar diplomacy. There was a little bit too much time spent in Quark's bar in what I saw of DS9.
Yeah, you got to stick with wait for the serialized Dominion War story to start. That's to me that's like a whole different show starting.
And well, Ronald Moore, really he did good. The Battlestar Galactica stuff afterward.
Mm-hmm. I love that guy.
Yeah, it is like at least 3 seasons of serial drama.
All right. You know, it's great that we're talking about Star Trek and all those old shows.
Yeah.
So what new shows are you guys watching that are good geeky shows? I'll toss out Fringe as a starter.
I never got
You consider that a new show? Isn't like its 4th season now?
Yeah, but I mean, relative to Star Trek?
It's still on.
I guess. Like contemporary shows?
Yeah.
Of all the shows that emerged from that era, like 4 years ago, mm-hmm. So it was like Fringe... Terminator.
Like the post-Battlestar era?
Right. It was a Bionic Woman. Fringe is, I think, easily the best one. It's the only one that's still around.
Right.
And I think the big twist after the first season was...
It seems like they're building
Herald
a really
Dimensions.
Interesting mythology around
that.
They are.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
A lot of hardcore fans.
But the other one I've come to like, and it's a little sci-fi series that nobody ever really talks about. It's called Haven.
I haven't even heard of it.
And it's actually based on a Stephen King novel.
Huh.
But very loosely based. But anyway, it's really interesting. They're building up this sort of mythology, and it's clear that they either have to end the show next season or it's going to jump the shark because they're building up to this really climactic thing.
I haven't seen it yet, but I heard that Alphas is pretty good, too.
So Alphas is excellent. Oh, that was the other one I was bringing up.
That was the most animated I've seen you yet.
Alphas is the it's the Heroes.
It's like Heroes. That was
like Heroes meets X-Men kind of vibe.
So
it's what would happen if Heroes was good?
In terms of shows that are like that, I've been recommended a British show that's similar to that. I forget its name. But it's like Heroes, people with powers, but they're really
start talking about Torchwood?
Fucked up powers. Like this one girl, her power is that whenever she touches someone, they go crazy over her or something. I forget. Someone in the chat's going to know the show.
Misfits. Okay.
They say that's
It's a British show. It's really good.
Yeah. I haven't seen that. That's a recommendation that people have been giving
me. The great thing about Alphas, in addition to the acting and the writing, is that the writing, because the show never does what you think it expected to do. It's very. Mm-hmm. It's not that it has a lot of twists. It's just that the way that they sort of progress the plot is like, wow, I didn't see that coming.
And that's tough to do because especially these kind of cases, there's so many formulas and cliches that you expect, right? It's hard to do something different. We have Jason Cross in the house.
Gentlemen, Jason Cross.
You know, we're coming close to.
We are coming close to the top of the hour,
so let's break out the Mad Libs.
Should we do a quick Mad Lib?
Yeah.
All right, let me go grab it.
We are literally 8 minutes away from an eighth of the way through Octobercast.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
You know, our longest podcast before today was just over 3 hours. I think it was last week.
So I'll mic you up.
Once a long time ago, when I was in much better shape than I am now, I participated in something called a 24-hour relay.
A relay.
24-hour relay.
No, to be clear, you're in better shape than everyone else here because you bike and run.
No, this is when I was like running track and cross country in college. I was actually in a varsity sport, right? And we did this thing called a 24-hour relay. And what it is you got 10 people on a team, and each person runs a mile.
Good answer.
Okay.
And then you do that for 24 hours.
What? Hold on, say that again.
So you have 10 people on a team.
Okay.
Each person runs a mile.
Okay.
And repeat for 24 hours. So you think, cool. So I run a mile. I have, you know, depending upon the quality of the runners, I have 45 minutes to an hour to rest.
Oh, right. Okay.
Right? No problem. Hey, man, by that 16th or 17th mile, you get up and it's like, oh, my God, my legs have turned into 2x4s.
When do you, like,
and
eat?
What's your total mileage at the end of that?
It depends. Our team only didn't even hit 200 miles. But the world record is like 240 miles or something like that.
That sounds insane. Yeah, yeah. Wow. It's like 24 hours of lemons, but with legs.
Right.
All right, so we're going to do a Mad Libs.
Hold on. First, let's introduce Jason Cross.
Jason Cross?
You guys know each other, I think.
Yes.
Jason, I think you're on. You might get up close to the mic. Don't be shy.
Okay.
You have to sit next to Gary, but he's okay.
That's all right.
I'm clean.
I'm the smelly one here.
I can't remember which episode.
Wait, hold on. I'm going to do the math. If Jason's coming in there, I get Jeff. I get Roger. I get Jeff Green. You get Gordon.
Oh, no.
I get Dan Stapleton. You get Patrick. And I get Veronica. Yes. This all works out. Don't worry about it.
Everything's coming up, Chan.
Don't worry about it.
Mm. So Jason is is at PC World these days.
Yes, right.
You guys used to work together at Extreme Tech.
Right.
Yes.
In the old Ziff Davis days. Mm-hmm.
Yes. He dragged me away from Computer Games Magazine.
Okay.
Where I worked before Extreme Tech.
And
I got him out of Vermont.
Yeah.
Well, you can take the boy out of Vermont. But you can't take the maple syrup. I don't know.
All right.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm not originally from Vermont. So, okay. Yeah. I'm originally from Florida, so
So Gary has the tech Mad Libs.
I picked these up. I actually didn't grow up with Mad Libs. They don't have them in England. At least I didn't when I was a kid. Discovered them as an adult. Picked up one at random to kill time on a road trip.
As an adult. I quoted that.
Actually didn't realize that they have many, many different flavors of Mad Libs. And I accidentally just picked up one. I think it was random. I guess it was fate. These are computer tech geeky Mad Libs.
Yes.
So these are perfect for
us. So what's the theme of the first one?
The first one is called Computer Lab. So this is perfect for Lloyd.
Now refresh the rules of the game. Yeah. Right?
I'm just going to ask you for a bunch of words. I'm going to say, give me an adjective, give me a noun, and you'll give me some words.
Okay.
And I'm going
to read. And they have to be computer related.
No, anything.
Oh, okay.
And the rest of the text is computer related.
Some of them might have some specifics. It might say like active verb.
Okay. Yeah, it may ask.
Computer-y noun.
You'll get it. When I do it, it's all going to be self-explanatory. Okay. So you're going to give me a bunch of words, and I'm going to read back what you've created.
Okay.
So we're going to start
He's gonna
with...
He's going to put words in your mouth.
We're going to start with an adjective.
Loosely.
Okay.
Wait, is loosely an adjective or an adverb?
It ends with L-Y. Looser would be the adjective.
Okay, looser.
We're fucked already. Will hates adverbs.
I do hate adverbs. They're my natural enemy.
No, I don't think either of those are going to work. You fucked this up already, guys.
I'm good at that. Hey.
It's Lloyd's fault. We had nothing to do with this.
Adjective is any kind of static describing word. So
describes a noun.
Yeah. Well, so like silly would be an adjective.
Stupidly.
Just loose is an adjective.
No, let me see.
We're all writers, right?
You can have loose, English. But you can't have loosely.
Wordsmiths.
You can have stupid, but not stupidly.
Inane.
Okay, so we'll start us off.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Lloyd should answer all these.
Okay, Lloyd. We're off to a good start. Now I would like a noun.
Whale.
Okay.
Okay.
And now I would like a male celebrity.
Patrick Stewart.
Okay.
All right.
Talking about Star Trek.
Good captain.
I'm liking where this is going.
Second best captain, I think. I'm just trolling Norm.
Give me another noun.
Headphones.
You're just looking around the room and saying words you see now, Lloyd.
Naming words.
Okay, now give me something alive.
Spore.
Okay. I think that's arguable.
Okay.
Mold. How about mold? Mold is a live thing, right?
Okay, I've written it in now.
It's too late. He's using ink.
Give me a place.
The Bermuda Triangle.
That's good. That's out of the box here. The longer we can make it, the worse it is for Gary, because he has to write really small to squeeze it in, too.
Okay.
How many more do we have here?
Okay, now I'm going to do...
We got a few more to do.
Are you just filling stuff in?
No, that's the same one as before, so I just get to replete it.
Okay.
Adjective.
You don't want to do something
like
boring.
A color.
Any describing word.
Like a color or something.
Color?
No, not
rustic?
A color.
Yeah.
What?
Rustic?
Rustic would be an adjective.
How's this going over in the chat?
Any female person in the room. Oh, we're fucked. I think
just
Sarah
put Norman. It's fine.
Okay, Norman.
Oh, come on. That's not fair.
another adjective.
Dopey.
There you go.
There you go. Okay.
Now we're cooking with gas. A verb ending in ing.
Trolling.
There you go.
There you go. That's about right.
Oh yeah, this is shaping up nicely. A noun.
Phlegm.
Oh no.
See, that's where we went. Now Lloyd's starting to roll.
The chat is upset that this is not filthy enough.
A past tense verb.
Past tense verb. Screwed.
Oh fuck me, this is gonna be great.
Oh boy.
Okay.
Boy.
A town.
A town. You mean not a city, but a
just
town.
Just says town. Actually, I mean, you can give me a city. But city's fine. Nicely.
Birmingham.
Okay, Birmingham's good.
Very soon, can see how this is shaping up. Plural noun.
I'm trying not to read it.
Eggs.
I'm trying not to spoil it for myself.
This is real podcast magic happening here.
I know.
Right now. Gary's been excited about these Mad Libs.
Perfect. I know. Maybe this wasn't the best idea.
right now, there are 3,000 people watching this.
A number.
Think about that for a minute.
E.
Come on.
Well, it's a number.
All right. You get you. Technically, you're right.
Oh my god.
A plural type of food.
Pizzas.
All right.
After E, I wanted something simple.
And a noun.
How many more of these are
two,
there?
Two to go.
Okay. Oh camera. Camera.
Camera. And a plural noun.
Lloyd's back to just looking around the room. Okay.
Flotillas.
Flotillas.
Okay, I
it's
guess
very
we have
plural.
Multiple.
All right, let's see how this goes. We're done.
Okay, Lloyd, Gary, read this out.
Why don't you read it out? Actually, no, the worst of reading stuff out.
We know that, right?
This one's called Computer Lab. I love our computer lab at school. It's so inane. Every morning after whale class, our teacher, Patrick Stewart, takes us to the lab so we can work on cool class projects like finding out who is the oldest headphones or what a spore eats for breakfast. Last week, our assignment was to research how many people live in the Bermuda Triangle. Since Patrick Stewart always lets us pick our rustic partners, I chose Norm because she's so dopey. We had the best time trolling on the internet. Wow, that one really worked.
Yeah.
We found the coolest phlegm that had all the information we needed. We screwed awesome facts about cities like Birmingham and all the eggs that live in them. Can you believe the E number of people live in Birmingham and that they love to eat pizzas for breakfast, lunch, and camera? That's a lot of flotillas.
Okay, we're done with the
Mad Libs. That's Mad Libs. Okay. That may be the first of
the not doing
that.
Actually, they'll be much better about 2 in the morning.
Yeah, 2 in the morning. Yeah.
When we're desperate, we won't be quite so picky about doing these.
Well, wow, so bad.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Gary, for some fantastic podcasts.
Don't criticize the creators of Mad Libs.
Nobody's drunk enough for that to be
You're
really
the one
funny
who brought these into our lives.
Mad Libs are awesome.
One more board game before we
Yeah,
go.
Totally.
Yes,
yeah.
So let's go back.
We talked about Dominion, right?
Yes.
The problem with Dominion, and to some extent a lot of these trading or these deck building games, is that they're very sort of like described as multiplayer solitaire. You know, you're kind of doing your own thing, building up your own deck.
Well, so you can make a Dominion deck that is very interactive.
But in fact, for the most part.
Yeah.
So the guys at AEG came up with a game called Nightfall.
Ooh.
This is an in-your-face, screw-your-opponent deck-building game.
Is this like Night Trap, but a card game?
I don't know Night Trap. But this is basically vampires, werewolves. That's sort of the oeuvre, if you will. And you're building up these, and you're basically attacking everybody else on the board.
Oh,
so
I like
no,
that.
Like, there's no like make your stuff stronger or whatever.
It's, yeah, you're doing that. You're building your deck and stuff like that.
It's really
but you're also
font,
and the way and the way you do it is you collect negative victory points. So when you damage somebody, they collect wounds.
Oh, so it's all curse cards.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, nice.
And then at the end of the game, when the ending condition is triggered, I forget what that is right off the top of my head right now. But when the end, I think it's a specific number of wounds that you per number of players. depending on the number of players. And when all the wounds, you count up the wounds. The person with the fewest wounds is the winner.
Nice. Yeah, so that's
sounds great.
Right?
Just like life.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. He who bleeds less bleeds best.
Or, right.
I don't
and it's got one of the mechanics that's got that's really cool is it's also a problem with the card. The problem with the cards is that they have these small icons on them, so you kind of and they're colored. So if you're colorblind, you're kind of screwed. Okay. But you can do what's called chaining, which each card has an effect. And if you chain off of a blue card, if a guy plays a card that's got a blue moon on it, you can chain your blue card onto that.
Or your moon card?
Yes. Okay. No, just your blue card.
Just your blue card. Okay.
They're all moons.
Okay.
So you chain your blue card on it, and you get an effect as well as that guy. And you can continue to do that, and it's pretty neat. Everybody around the table
so
can
it's
do
like
that.
It's like when you play Uno with the crazy rolls.
Right.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you
that
so
was
much.
A great segment. Yeah, Lloyd is awesome. Lloyd.
All right.
We got to have you on the podcast more often. We always say that every time you come by. So
I'd be up for that.
We will make you eat the kimchi burrito again, though.
Oh, that was
or
delicious.
One of your, I want you to make me a cup of coffee. One of these
I could do that right now.
Now might be a great time for a coffee segment.
But, I think it's too early for me yet, but I can make coffee for something.
I would like you to make me
next
some
time.
Coffee.
I need to dial it in a little next bit before time. I start making coffee for other people because you know things change.
No one's taking a bathroom break.
No one has. I'm kind of feeling it.
No one wants to be the first.
No.
You don't want to break the seal.
Yeah.
You don't
want to break the seal.
You don't want to lose at this, Norm.
Lloyd.
You know, I get a Wii at the end of this, right?
Oh, so, Lloyd, thank you so much for coming by.
My pleasure.
Lloyd Case on Twitter?
Yes.
And, well, you can read here at Tested, at Maximum PC.
PC World.
PC yep. World. Yep. You're all on right. The internet.
I'm on the internet.
Thanks, yes. Lloyd.
Bye now.
See you. Jason Cross.
Yes, sir.
I'm rotating like 45 degrees to my left. I'm ignoring Norm now.
Well, that's okay.
Talking to
so,
Jason. I hope
just
your
like
levels
usual,
are good.
Right?
We haven't heard anybody from the internet complaining.
Okay. It's weird. I can't hear myself. So,
yeah,
that's fine.
You should be able to.
May not be plugged in, or alternately.
Do you get anything in the cans?
I get everybody else, just not mine.
Okay, but
that's fine.
Okay, you can hear yourself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear it in my head, so I sound better in my head too. So
that's just
Jason's volume is now going up in my earphones.
I haven't adjusted anything, so I don't know why that would be the
maybe
case.
Maybe it's psychosomatic.
I'm going to turn it up a little. Okay, how's that? Better, worse, or about the same?
Yeah, it's about the same.
Okay, well, it'll work itself out. Maybe get up on the...
I don't need to hear myself, so it's, you know, because I hear myself in my head.
Really
so as long as everyone else hears it, I'm cool.
We totally hear you. Yeah. Everything's good. They hear you on the internet.
Yeah. We should say something worthwhile now that they can hear me.
Just, it's a good pro tip, just to check in on something that's not at all worthwhile. How sweaty are your all's ears right now? I'm getting pretty sweaty on these.
My ears are not sweaty, but the pits are sweaty.
Gross,
I'm great. I'm feeling like the climate is good. It's not too hot.
It's hot outside.
It's nice outside.
It's really
not
cool.
By the way, not doing
summer
this in the bunker
right.
was the smartest move you ever
really
came
bad.
Up with.
Oh,
yeah. That's Having that was genius. We'd be struggling by now already, I think.
Our normal podcast room is pretty horrible.
I mean, usually by the time we're done with like a 2 or 3 hour podcast, we cannot wait to get out of there.
It's 85, 86.
Right now, I feel good.
It cannot be smaller than our podcast room at PC World.
Oh, you should go see it.
Get one of the interns to show you.
I think like this table just fits in our
podcast. Oh, okay. Maybe it is smaller.
It's a closet that we
like. These are the podcasts. We put these together and these fill the room. Pretty much.
Yeah, we have one of these that we sit around.
Okay.
And that's it. And it's like a closet that, you know, and so there's no air duct in there or anything. So get it, have the door open, get it cold, go to your podcast.
And by the way, I'd just like to say the people have spoken. The chat is vastly in favor of more Mad Libs.
More Mad Libs.
So you can shove it.
Are you just saying that?
No, go look at the chat.
The chat was really divided.
No, they loved it.
Well, we'll do it late at night. When
yeah, we'll do it later when everyone's a bit raggedy.
Gary has to read them, though, because it's so, with the British accent, it's so much more authoritative.
Wow. You believe it. I draw you
there
into
are a
the
lot
story.
Of people saying, hey, I didn't say that. This is a lie. Gary Whitta can go to hell.
I think you're making that up.
They said there wasn't enough penis in the one that we did.
Look, more.
Anyway,
more,
okay, yeah,
more.
Let's move on.
Jason, how are you doing?
I'm fine.
Thank you for coming by.
My pleasure. Well, you know what? It makes me leave work early on Friday, so...
It's perfect. It's good because you can say it's for charity.
I had a feeling
you
had a lot of that actually, because Colin seemed really anxious to get the early slot. I don't want to say anything.
Well, he has a he lives in Santa Cruz.
He
has a long drive home.
Right.
As well.
Yeah. He said he was going back to the office.
Yeah he's, got, he's got
his
office
right by
stuff.
Ours. Yeah. We're right there. We're
he's
there
down South of Market, right?
Yeah, we're like a block away from the IGN guys on Second. We're right next to 21st Amendment.
Oh yeah,
you guys have
food options there.
You guys have great food options stuff down there.
Yeah.
Great restaurants, great bars.
Not a lot of them, though. Like, lunchtime's rough because there's just not enough places.
The grilled cheese place is awesome.
Oh, it's packed. It's, that place is a long wait every time. I had that today, though.
Chicken and waffles, though, is walking distance. It's a long wait.
It is. No, I go there sometimes. I love that place. Yeah.
That place, we drive.
The little Farmer Brown skillet thing.
Little skillet.
Yeah. That's good.
Also,
that and HRD. HRD is the other one we go to all the time.
Oh, what's HRD?
Oh, you don't know HRD?
No.
All right, so
we're way north.
If you've been to the Chicken and Waffles place, it's right on South Park on the other corner on 3rd.
Okay. It's kind of across from Wired?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like not even as far down as Wired, but okay. Yeah. And it's a little like coffee shop type place. They even featured them on like Food Network a couple months ago, and they got even more
stuff. Oh, that sounds
It's
horrible.
Slammed every day.
Yeah,
it's like a
bad.
Greasy Spoon, Korean style, diner food.
It's just making me hungry.
And it's
okay, I'll take
cheap.
My shoes off. That'll help.
And it's cheap. And it's really good. And they have things like a Mongolian cheesesteak and stuff like this.
Oh, what is it? Mongolian
cheesesteak. It sounds fantastic.
You've had Mongolian.
Is it like Mongolian beef in a cheesesteak?
Yes.
That's the best fucking thing I've ever heard in my life.
It is amazing. It's really good. And like $6. So
wow. Holy shit.
Yeah.
What? Damn.
Oh my God. So, I want this now.
HRD is
can
the
we?
Best.
Sorry, kids. Charity over. Yeah. Time for Mongolian cheesecake.
Cheesecake.
Wow.
That would be
fantastic.
Mongolian cheesecake would be brutal. So
not as good.
You didn't give Jason a proper intro.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in, we're here with Jason Cross, who I've known you for ages, it seems like. I think the first time we met was at a Gary party, though, in person. Like
that's what I do. I bring people together.
Yeah. In Gary's old place in the Presidio. Yeah.
Where you used to live with Biederman and many other people over the years.
Wait, you guys lived in the Presidio?
No.
Gary did.
Oh, no, Gary did. No, Gary did.
But
yeah.
Jason and I were at a party, and like
I used to live with Darren.
Was that my Wii Sports Resort party?
I think it was the Rock Band party.
That was the very, very first Rock Band party.
Yes.
So remember where you got the fire pit?
When we talked about it being best game of the forever?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the one.
I think. Remember?
I think you may be right.
I wore that like British jacket, and I walked up before I met Leah, and the first thing I said was, "I'm here for the Rock." That's right.
Wow.
That's right. That was
the guitar and everything.
You made a lasting impression that day.
Yeah.
Nobody.
God, do you remember when playing Rock Band was a thing that people did?
Oh, yeah.
I missed that.
I played last Friday.
Those were fun. Yes.
So, Jason, you're at PC World now. You do like PC. You're the PC.
Yeah. I mean, PC World is so like general user broad base.
Yeah.
It's not for the hardcore guys, right?
Yeah.
You know, which is where I come from. But that's it's for your mom wants to buy a computer or your boss or whatever just wants to read by my computer. So I manage all the laptop reviews. And I manage a couple of other editors beneath me that do all the how-to stuff and all of the desktops and component stuff.
Cool. So you have Ultrabooks.
I do.
I have, excellent.
And I have an Ultrabook.
Very exciting.
I haven't seen
one. Which one is this?
This is Acer's Aspire S3.
Okay. Ah. Now I have a MacBook Air
this
here.
Just went on sale like today
is
or yesterday
13
or
inch?
Something. Yeah.
Okay.
It's so the $900 one.
This is the 11-inch MacBook Air, so it's not the best comparison, but let's take a look at
this. So this is more competitive with the 13-inch MacBook.
Yeah. And this just came out.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
Yep. Well, yeah, this is the first one of these to come out.
Oh, I like
this. Let's do a quick look.
That's okay.
Well, we're not
going to try and...
Yeah, go ahead.
Will, I'm going to give it to you and let you...
No. I'm driving the camera. You hold.
All right, so...
I'm going to switch everybody over here. There's too much stuff for me to manage. I'm never going to
get out of the
lock
screen
in the morning.
Yeah, there's no code.
Okay.
It just comes like
just
that.
Click you right
just,
on it.
Yeah,
so this is a nice looking laptop. It's really thin.
Please be very descriptive since this is going on audio.
This is going to be audio for most people.
It's very so
let's try to describe it then.
It's a little thicker than the MacBook Air. It doesn't taper as much toward the front.
How does it compare weight-wise to the 13-inch
MacBook Air?
About the same.
3 pounds.
Okay.
The
form factor is very – it doesn't have the unibody, but it's very similar, that kind of tapered edge, like you said.
Yeah,
they're using kind of a Lenovo-y kind of hinge, it looks like, so will it go flat back?
You try and get it.
I don't think it goes all the way flat back.
Okay.
I haven't tried it.
Get there's some pretty big like rubber feet on that, too.
Yeah, I don't know why it has these giant rubber feet on it, because there's no vents on the bottom.
Exactly.
Oh, weird.
But here, let's see how far back it goes.
Okay.
Almost all the way.
More so than the Air.
Yeah, more than most.
I know a lot of people don't like that. Gordon, especially, has been a big critic of the MacBook style hinge in general, because you can't kick it back far enough to have it,
Yeah, this is almost flat. It's got sort of metal on the outside, but the inside deck is plastic.
Okay.
So the build quality, it's not the build quality of the Air, but it's okay. I mean, it's $900 compared to the 13-inch Air.
Yeah. If you want an Air-like experience and you're a PC guy, this is...
You should talk into your microphone.
Pretty close. Okay.
This is the way to go. Yeah.
What processor and stuff? Is this an SSD as well? It obviously is.
No, do you want to check this out?
Yes and no. So it's Core i5... 25 something. The 1.6 gig, slightly less than the than the Air's 13-inch Air's okay. i5. They have the 1.8. This is the 1.6 Core i5.
So it's so the same as the one in the high-end 11-inch, basically.
Yes. Okay. And it's got a 320-gig rotating hard drive with the 20-gig SSD cache.
Oh, okay. So it's the promise of the hybrid hard drive that we've been hearing about literally for years.
Yeah, it's Intel's version of that, because there's another company that does sort of a software solution version of that.
So
Intel's version of that.
So it's built into the chipset, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you think, Noam? I like it. I can't believe it's not $100.
Like the Air has no Ethernet jack.
Okay.
HDMI, I see, which
HDMI,
is nice.
HDMI, couple USB ports, no USB 3 on this one.
That's okay. For this kind of machine, I mean, some USB of them, 3 would be nice.
So there's four of these things coming out this year.
Okay.
There's this one. There's an Asus. There's an Asus 11 and 13.
Asus.
I always do that.
We get corrected
all
the time.
I do that to their, to
this
their
Asus
faces.
ZenBook.
They're very, yes, they're very.
Toshiba. And then also
Toshiba's protege Z830 or something, and then Lenovo. Yeah,
but so would you wouldn't count the I guess the Samsung one, Series 9.
So the Series 9, it's totally a thing like this. It was just before they came up with the Ultrabook
branding, and also they're more expensive.
Facts. Well, they came down, so they're kind of priced like the Airs are. But
now, do these exist because of the MacBook Air? Is this a direct response to the MacBook Air, the whole Ultrabook category?
Sort of. I mean, because the Air's, what, 3 years old?
It didn't really take off until this most recent generation.
Exactly. And you know, other guys like Dell did this with the Adamo, and then they gave up on it.
Well, the Adamo was a weird design, too. It had that weird, like...
It wasn't great, but it was that suit, let's be super-duper thin like the Air kind of thing, right? And it didn't pan out, so...
Well, but the processors that they would use in these, even the very first MacBook Air, not the first in the current design, but the first one, I had one of those. It's not a laptop you can really use. It's too slow. It's like a super-powered
MacBook. It's not great. Yeah. So these are... So I don't know that these are necessarily exactly a response to the Air. I think they were planning on doing this.
Right.
I think when the Air was so popular, they said, we need to go much bigger. We need everybody needs to invest in this a lot harder.
And how does this compare spec-wise to an equivalent 13-inch Air?
It's a slightly slower CPU than the entry-level 13-inch. You wouldn't notice.
Is this a Sandy Bridge?
Yes.
Okay.
It's just the same graphics.
4 gigs of memory.
4 gigs of RAM.
Bigger hard drive, but a spinning
bigger hard drive,
a
but
thing.
Spinning with but the hybrid instead of an SSD.
But also,
and what about the
$900?
$900.
Okay, and what's
so actually cheaper
life
than an Air?
Much cheaper.
Wow,
$400.
Because the 13-inch starts at what? 12?
1300.
Right?
$1,299.
What's the front-facing camera for video conferencing and stuff?
Yep.
Is it VGA or is it?
I think it's 1.3 megapixels. Okay. So it's high def.
Who's this aimed at? Just everyday PC guys.
Yeah.
Right.
Basically. Yep.
Oh, that's really cool.
I think this is the kind of thing where I think I know a lot of people who have sort of Air envy but really feel like they need Windows and are going to be looking to buy
these. Would this be a better option than just putting Windows on an Air?
It'd be cheaper.
Certainly cheaper, yeah.
The Air
it's a nice machine.
The Air will be a little faster.
Mm-hmm.
And I like
even when running Windows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Different processor.
Yeah, different processor and a full SSD. And I like the build quality of the Air a little better. That unibody is really kind of nice, right? I mean, this isn't bad. This isn't cheap feeling, but it's the Air is really nice, right? So, I think the Air is better, but is it $400 better?
And again, sometimes
$400 is a lot of money
for work reasons or whatever, or your own preference. You just want the PC,
right?
Not the Mac.
So there's this, and this
is out.
This just came out. In fact, I don't know if it's in stock anywhere. They're selling them.
And are we going to see a whole bunch of... is this a whole new category now? We're going to see a whole bunch of these things?
We're only going to see four this year. Next year, you're going to see a ton of these.
Yeah. Okay.
When Intel comes out with Ivy Bridge, the
with
sequel
better
of
graphics.
Sandy Bridge,
right.
Better graphics, and also they're going from 32 nanometer to 22 nanometer. Yep. They're going to cut power a lot.
Yep.
That's really going to go in these things.
That's their tick, though. It's the same basic architecture, but different process.
Yeah.
And
the graphics is not a tick, though. It's weird. The graphics is actually a whole new architecture.
Now, is this in competition with or the next evolution of netbooks, like much more capable, but a different kind of portability?
I would love to see this replace netbooks.
Because I never liked netbooks.
I hate them.
Netbooks are long gone. I mean, we're going to see these in Costco.
Are netbooks finished?
Well, so the thing with netbooks is they're $400.
Right.
None of these are quite getting a $400.
But you get what you pay for.
You really do. And they're still, they're heavy and thick because they're really cheap. You know, they don't really spend the money required to make something really thin and light. So, I mean, they're... Half the netbooks are 4 pounds or 3.5 4 pounds, just like this.
Well, netbooks was the problem, like selling you like a 10-year-old computer or a 5-year-old computer,
yeah,
for cheap.
So that's
with
like
Atoms and stuff.
It seems like a pretty capable machine. Is that, could you do, what kind of gaming could you do on that?
Not
thing?
Much. Really? I mean, it's like the Intel integrated graphics. Not
well,
much.
When you see even the same way you say not much, you can still do some. Like TF2 will still run on low graphics native. Still will StarCraft.
Play WoW on it, pretty decent.
I think you could probably. You
can the lower play WoW, but like don't really kill your hardware.
You gotta crank all the settings way down.
You're not gonna be playing Battlefield 3 on that thing.
No. Not even close.
Not even close.
In fact, it won't even. I don't even think it'll run because Battlefield 3 needs DirectX 10.1. Yeah.
So. But again, you know, these days you don't really need your PC to do, unless you're doing like hardcore video editing. So much, you don't need a ton of power.
There's so much great gaming out there that doesn't really require much horsepower, like whether it's Minecraft or Dungeons of Dreadmore or whatever. Any of these things that are,
And God forbid if you're into like casual games and Facebook type stuff.
Yeah.
Run Farmville pretty good, I'd imagine.
It runs Farmville just fine, I'm sure. I'm not going to test that.
Oh, yeah. No. For the record, Will's first to bathroom break.
Oh, well, yay, we win!
What?
Will, your bladder is weak. You are weak. You're a weak, weak man.
Oh, man. Yeah, so they're pretty good.
So this is the new hotness. This is what PCs are all about right now.
I think these are going to be really hot this Christmas.
Yeah. $900 is pretty compelling.
$900. Somebody's going to come out with an $800 one, and I think the Lenovo is the most expensive at about $1,000 or $1,100. I think they've got the most expensive.
Now, is there going to be a smaller 11-inch category? Because I love the 11-inch.
Not for
it's
this
so portable.
One. Not for this one.
Okay,
but
we will
ones,
see 11-inch Ultrabooks.
The Asus ones have an 11 and a 13. Yeah.
Okay.
This year, and then next year they're going to be
Asus, isn't it?
What's that?
Wait, there's some confusion over how we are we even supposed to be pronouncing this. How is
Asus?
Is it Asus?
Well, this is an Acer.
This is an Acer. I always get the two mixed up because they sound so similar.
I know, me too. I do this for a living and I find myself typing it and going, wait a minute.
The Asus ones, and it's pronounced Asus, like U-H.
Are you sure about that?
Oh, I am 100% sure about this.
Okay, yes.
So the Asus ones are going to have 11 and 13. Okay. All the other ones are 13 this year. Next year, by summer, there's going to be 24 of them from everybody.
Norm and I
HPs
both went
and
with
Dells
the 11.
And I'm sure they're going to be all over the place.
My girlfriend has the 13. It's great, but like you want it. I value the. This is so great to walk around with. I mean, it's barely bigger than an iPad.
Right, and with the Air, it wasn't like if you got the 13, you suddenly had more CPU power. The most expensive 11 has the same processor as the best 13.
But what you do get with the 13 is much better battery life, and that is that's this
same
thing. The battery life on this thing is very, very weak.
Yeah.
That's a good question. How are the battery lives on these?
I just got it, so I haven't. I mean, they're claiming. Great thing. The claims are always garbage on battery life.
Right.
You have to test it yourself. So we haven't gotten there yet. But I'm expecting 4 hours, 5 hours.
When you, as a professional reviewer, a guy who tests these things for a living, how do you put these things through their paces when you test them?
Oh, so we have, since I think we review somewhere between 80 and 90 laptops a year. So we have like a whole suite of like rigorous, like they all get the same.
Do you have
thing.
A standard set of tests?
Yeah, a standard set of tests and stuff. We have guys who do that. You know, that's the. In the labs, who just
what kind of
test
benchmarking tools do you use? Just your own stuff.
So there's PC World has a benchmark called Worldbench, which runs through a script of Office applications and 3D Studio Max and video encoding and so on stuff, and times those things. So it gets a Worldbench score. Although we're working to update that because get newer applications in there, and then we do things like. We run a couple games that a standard set of games that scale all the way from like netbooks up to high end desktops,
right?
So, like Dirt 2 and Far Cry 2 and stuff. We run those at different resolutions, and for battery tests, we do it's a script that simulates typing for 10 minutes, and then it simulates it plays a video, a full screen video for 10 minutes. And then it goes back to typing for 10 minutes and it does that until it dies.
What's the purpose of that test? Just for battery rundown?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just for battery rundown. Just because people quote Mobile Mark. Mobile Mark is you turn your brightness all the way down and you turn everything off and you turn your computer into a clock. It doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
And how long can your computer not do anything is not a very useful metric of any. I don't care. So.
And how did this do in your
We haven't gotten there yet.
Oh,
we literally just got it in and I just wanted to like bring it by and let everybody take a look at it.
Right. It's sexy, cool, right? I like it.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not, again, it doesn't quite have the lust factor, the fit and finish of the MacBook.
No, well, just
nothing,
like the fan.
Nothing
like
else
the fan
really
in
does.
The back. Right.
Exactly.
Like that. Yep.
But it sounds like very viable option for PC guys that want to have that slimness.
Or just, if you're looking at the 13 and you don't want to spend $1,400.
Right.
Yeah.
Good stuff. What else is going on in PCs?
Not a lot. What's going on in PCs is everybody cares about tablets and phones.
Right.
You know, that's the hardest thing is that every PC manufacturer is going, how do I get into that sweet tablet and phone business?
And, because I mean, we've certainly seen the figures with the iPad is eating badly into the laptop sales, right?
Well, it depends on who you ask. Laptop sales are not, like, really down, per se, but they haven't had the growth they were expected. But then the economy sucks and yada, yada.
What do you think of these hybrid products like the Transformer?
I didn't like the Transformer because when you actually put the tablet kind of on the keyboard thing, it's, like, wobbly and doesn't fit. It doesn't make a good laptop, right?
Right,
well,
right.
I think it was more the delay in the typing that...
I think there's a room for that once we get to the area where... Like, they gave away that Windows tablet at Build.
Yeah, right? So you were there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
what did you think of that?
Well, I wouldn't buy that tablet now. Well, but by the time Windows 8 comes out, there'll be really great ones.
Right, I mean, you'll be able to get, that the next generation of that in that tablet.
Yeah, there'll be Ivy Bridge and all this other stuff. It'll be great. So that would make a pretty good tablet. But these things with, like, Android and then you snap on a keyboard, I'm not really down with
it. But the big hope for the future is Windows 8, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Desktop and tablet. OS does it all.
Yeah, all in one thing.
What did you think of the Metro stuff? I mean, you're one of the only people I know that's actually used the Windows 8.
Yeah, it's... I wish that the build that we had all the cool stuff they showed off.
That's the thing that totally bummed
me
out.
All the best stuff is not in the developer preview build that you can go download.
Right, and so stuff like the contacts, the unified contact list and all that is...
Yeah, and all your photo thing and all the cloud photo stuff, all that stuff's not in there. So it's so pre... People forget what the developer preview for Windows 7 was like.
Yeah, it was Windows Vista.
Yeah, people were like, "What's the difference?" Right? This is way.
Well, they had to do that to get the
Yeah, the developers got to start making these new Metro apps. So, I think it's going to look really good come probably CES when they launch a beta. It'll be just like Windows 7 launch a beta. CES.
Then it'll be fine. I mean, the other big question they weren't really talking about at Build was how the traditional desktop integrates with the Metro apps for people who use this as a desktop, you know, on a real computer.
Right.
And like,
basically boils down to, I think, is that your start menu is now a full screen start menu, essentially.
Yeah.
Like I ran it at work with on a machine with two monitors.
Yeah.
And you just leave your start menu screen
on the left side,
on one
right side, whatever.
And,
yeah. The thing I found. Well, the thing I realized after using the full screen start menu for a little bit is that I don't ever use the start menu in Windows anymore.
Yeah.
I literally mash the button, type what I'm looking for, it pops right up, and I don't I only drill down into that program files, that whole tree when I need to find something I can't remember the name of, which doesn't happen that often, it turns
out. This is what I'm confused about because I haven't really sat through or played around with the Windows 8 demos. How much time do Microsoft imagine, or how much time is it really going to be the case that people will spend their computing time now in the very fancy Metro tile interface, and how much is actually through that and just with a typical kind of Windows type experience?
I think that they're expect. I mean, I don't know really, but I think what they're expecting is that for a lot of either really thin and light laptops, which are going to have a lot of touchscreens on those, or tablets, convertible tablets that turn the screen around, it's a laptop thing. I think they're going to see. They think people are going to spend a lot of time with that interface there. And then on desktops, I think...
Right, so Metro is really more for the tablet experience and the typical desktop.
The tablets
and... More like we know already.
On the PC side, we're seeing, like, almost all the desktops are transitioning to all-in-ones, like your iMac, for
example. Right.
That's kind of... That's a huge growth part of the desktop space, and all the other desktops are declining, your old towers and stuff. And there's a lot of them with touchscreens. And right now, they have all this proprietary touch crap.
Mm-hmm.
So this really solves that issue.
Windows 8 has all its own touch... stuff built in.
Yeah, it'd just be like a giant tablet, except, now when you're a developer, you just make a Windows 8 app and you don't have to worry about, it's proprietary for HP.
Do you think people want to do that? Do you think people want to sit at their screen and touch?
I'd like that in the kitchen.
I bet you could.
I mean, there's places I would want.
You have a PC in your kitchen, though.
If I had something that had a touch screen, I probably would.
Kitchen,
if I had a thing I could just hang on the wall.
In a world.
Imagine a world.
Where your fridge tells you, you're out of tomatoes.
You were talking about this earlier. Like, you went to a Kindle and you expected the touch.
I totally expected it.
Right? So that's actually started happening with computers. Like, people are...
I don't have that desire to reach up and touch my eye. That hasn't translated to my desktop experience yet.
Right? But if you were 8... and you saw smartphones and iPads as much as anything else.
But it's actually more effort for me to reach up and touch the screen than it is to just where my hands naturally are to use a mouse and keyboard.
That's not my big concern with the Metro stuff. My concern with the Metro stuff is we're suddenly entering a place where in order to fully support users on Windows, developers are going to have to write two different applications for desktop and the Metro thing. Because if you're on the desktop, you're going to want a desktop version of that that you can just dock on the side of the screen or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if you're on the tablet, then you want to have the, you know, it's really weird and unwieldy to me to have two completely different desktop paradigms on the same device.
Yeah.
I think my hope is that there's something that they haven't shown us yet that's going to kind of address that.
Yeah.
And we'll see that at CES in the beta.
Yeah, it's just like nothing else has addressed that. Like where you have the same problem with, you know, if you write a Mac app, well, that doesn't give you an iOS app, but you do. But what if I wanted to use it on both? It does solve the problem of, like you still have to develop that app twice, but you can still sort of sync between them because you still have one user profile between both.
That's true.
That's kind of cool, right?
So in theory, you should be able to write to the same files and all that kind of stuff and have a unified...
And they talked about that. I missed a lot of those things at Build, but they talked about their Azure, like, cloud stuff and all, where the whole idea of, like, how do you write these apps where all of our profile settings and all of our save stuff and everything just automatically transfers over to other people, your other machines, your other devices.
What's going on here?
Lloyd's mug.
What's going on?
I need some place to put my tea bag, so I'm using Lloyd's coffee mug. Thank you, Lloyd.
Oh, you made tea in your Zojirushi.
I made tea in my Zojirushi. Right.
I'm starting to jones for some. At some point, I need to make some coffee.
Well, we can help you out here in a little bit.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
I can ready for some coffee. Yeah. No, you don't offer our guest anything.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What kind of host are you?
Jason, there's a fridge over on the other side of the camera.
Yeah, feel free to help yourself.
I would get up, but I'm wired in again. And
you know what, Joe? I'll go to the fridge and I'll grab myself something while I'm there. What would you like?
Not anything, not diet.
There's a
that might be a problem.
Yeah, the full strength is in the other room, unfortunately.
You like the full strength stuff?
Yeah, I don't do diet.
Look how skinny he is. He doesn't have to worry about that. I'm really interested in the Windows 8. I know, like,
it's got a long way to go. Some of it's so polished looking. Some of the stuff they've demoed looks so cool that people don't realize, like, hey, they got like a year before this comes out.
Well, so that brings up the other question. I really wonder. Like, it was weird to me that they had this big giant... I understand the developer event is big, and there's a lot of people that come to that, because there's a lot of Windows developers. But it was really weird to me that they made a big show of streaming it at Microsoft.com/Windows and not hiding it behind MSDN or TechNet or whatever they normally do. And it felt weird to me that they had, like, Time reporters and those kinds of people there writing about this when it's something that normal people aren't going to be able to touch for 18 months.
Yeah, or at least a year, right? It's probably going to be next fall.
They want it to still seem relevant, though. How many of those million downloads do you think initially were of actual from developers?
Well, a lot of them were...
Large number of people were just users.
Yeah, a lot of people were just wanting to see what the future looks like. Yeah.
Yep.
Which is a perfectly normal thing. But I don't know. I'm really interested in the Metro stuff. I think that there's a really compelling touch interface after using Samsung tablet.
Yeah, that and, you know... Windows Phone 7, like, as whatever problems it has, interface is not
fantastic,
one of them, right?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean,
they've been refining it. Have you been reading the Build 8 blogs, the last two?
Yeah. They've been tweaking things based on some on what people say. Some of it's like, we've already fixed that. It just wasn't in that build you had. Yeah.
The whole, like, putting information on the home screen rather than a useless list of icons, much better experience.
I kind of think that, like you said before, I don't use the start menu. Like, I don't use the start menu. They have statistics. They did some blog post about, like, look, nobody's using the start menu anymore.
Yeah.
But I think if the start menu actually had information about those apps, that I didn't have to go dig into them first.
Or could use a glimpse in at least. Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like maybe I wouldn't fire up some app if I could just on my home screen say, whatever.
My only problem is that they're using the start screen as a replacement for the start menu. Start screen kind of serves two purposes. On the desktop, it's a replacement for a start menu. On tablets, notebooks, it is the primary screen that they expect most people to interact with the Metro apps, right?
Yeah.
I never really used the start menu. I did use it for search. I hit the Windows key and start typing in something. If
that
I do that in Windows,
works, though.
It still works, but it swaps your entire screen to the start screen.
It's jarring.
It's a little jarring.
Yeah. Well, it's just a weird mode change. It's if you're used to something popping up, that is really loud, by the way.
I know.
Just so you know.
I'm stepping away from the mic.
It's a good policy, Tezande. it's oh my god, I'm surrounded by jerky on both sides. Have either offered jerky to our guest?
I want some jerky.
I don't want to. I'm okay. I was gonna.
I'll take the pepper.
Jason had the pepper jerky. I find that the best jerky has Native Americans on it.
Whoa, no,
what?
No.
That's what Gary's eating right now.
This is not the best jerky.
Yours is by Jack.
This is why I agree with you, pointing that out is racist.
Okay, fair enough. We were talking about Windows 8. I think it seems like the common consensus is we'll see more in January at CES. Ballmer's going to get up on stage and get real sweaty and excited. Yeah. And
oh, they got to not put him on stage.
I actually like Ballmer.
He's a terrible presenter.
Whoa, who are they going to put on stage?
Sanofsky is way.
Oh, Sanofsky is really good.
Yeah, he's way better presenter.
In terms of presenters, you're talking about Microsoft presenters. Remember when Robbie Bach would do stuff?
Robbie Bach was okay, right?
No, fake.
No, he's terrible.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He was super
rehearsed and fake and no good.
Well, they're all super rehearsed. Norm and I snuck in to a keynote, a CES keynote, to the practice session immediately before 1 year.
Yeah.
Because the doors were open. We were just like sticking our head in. They do the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like four or five times.
Sure.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, and it built. They did the thing. They did that.
Comes off that way, then, you know. Well, you know, it's about feeling.
The key to live blog that is to sit next to the teleprompter.
Yeah.
Because the big screen is watch the teleprompter. Yeah. And you can just transcribe.
Yeah. Well, did you notice that Sanofsky was doing that thing on the press preview day at Build? He had notes, like flashcards up on the screen, but for the most part, it was not prompted. Right. It was just he was having a conversation.
It felt like that, at least. Yeah. Yeah. So he was good at that. Jay Allard was good at that back in the day.
Yeah. Jay Allard was always entertaining.
He was a good presenter.
Do you think Ballmer is the right guy to be running Microsoft?
I really don't.
I agree. I think he's a joke.
He's a sales guy.
I think he comes from an era where computers don't exist anymore. Like he comes from.
You mean the one where you just look at the amount of memory and you buy the one with the most memory and the most cycles?
He comes from an era of like specs and stats and selling to business and stuff like that. And all you hear about now is consumerization of IT and stuff like that. I mean, he doesn't understand the experience of a computer. Like he really doesn't get it. Guys like Sanofsky, you can tell they get that, right? You can see that they're.
He's a user first.
Yeah, so you can understand that it has to come from this user end experience first, and then we can, you know, it is like Ballmer's like the person I blame for Microsoft practically owning the smartphone market and losing it all.
Yeah, yeah, because Windows Mobile 6, they had massive market share. It was them and RIM, and they squandered the whole thing.
Yeah, just by not thinking about users, right?
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
And then Apple came along and said, look, here's one you can use, and it destroyed everything.
What's the quote? Well, hey, people don't want to browse the web on their phone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Nobody wants to use their fingers on the phone.
That quote's going to haunt him forever about how the iPhone was not going to get any market share, and he just kind of laughed it off. And this guy's still in charge?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that the kind of statement that just shows how little vision...
Dude, Bill Gates said 640K memory is all you'll ever need.
Yeah, but... Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of apocryphal. And even then, it's hard to imagine how technology is going to go. But when you laugh off a competitor...
That's good.
Not just a competitor, but a competitor that at that time, everybody else was already like, oh my God, it's the Jesus phone, right?
Yeah.
Like, I can kind of see it like right before Jobs came back when no one knew what he was going to do. But like after he's already established Apple as, you know, a force to be reckoned with again... Yeah. And now there's going to be a phone bomb and goes, oh, come on.
Well, but at that point, when the iPhone launched with no apps and Windows Phone had apps, even though there, you know, you had phones with real keyboards,
it had apps, multitasking, all these buzzwords, and a terrible user experience.
Yeah, universally bad.
And really bad battery life.
I had one of the Singular 8125s on Windows Mobile 5. It wasn't great, but it would last all day.
Yeah.
Which Norm's iPhone 3G wouldn't a year after that came out.
I got to admit, I do love Windows Phone 7 though. I think it's a great
OS. Phone. The phones need to be a little better.
Well, hopefully Nokia will
hopefully
fix
Nokia
that.
Fix
these
that.
Flagship phones.
Yeah.
When are we going to see those?
When you say the phones need to be better.
It's later this year.
You mean
the hardware is not very
exciting. Or the internal hardware?
I think more design. Like I think people make too much about dual core this and whatever.
No, absolutely. That's what I'm like.
Graphics performance needs to get better. No joke.
Yeah.
Like I think the dual core thing is overblown. You can use one of these fast.
The Inspire 4G, the Samsung Infuse 4G, is a fast single core phone.
I can't tell the difference between
that and the Galaxy S2.
Most people can't. Yeah, I think it's fine.
Well, the other side of
but
it
I
is
think they need the actual design of the phones themselves, the cameras.
The Samsung ones are nice.
Stuff, yeah,
the HTC ones not so much.
Yeah,
even the Samsung ones feel plasticky and kind of cheap. They started giving them away free 3 months after they came out, or near enough.
Yeah.
The thing I want to see in these phones, in the Windows Mobile phones specifically, is a much better, tighter, really slim, really, really sexy industrial design.
Yeah.
And we haven't gotten that yet. I think Nokia is going to bring that.
I think Nokia
there's a lot of pressure
on
them.
Your best bet.
What do you think is the best
designed looking phone, industrial design. In terms of the things you're talking about, what's
not
the best
the iPhone 4?
Yeah, outside of the iPhone 4.
I actually do like the Galaxy S2.
Can we count Japan phones that don't exist here?
I don't know enough about Japan phones to talk.
They have better stuff.
So, you know, the Nokia, like the N9 is a really nice looking phone.
Yeah.
The Droid X, which is an old phone now.
I don't like these really big phones. I don't like these 4-point-something inch screen
phones. I like the 4.3, 4.5. Bigger than that is crazy.
I actually like the Samsung Focus. You know, it's kind of plasticky, but it's very lightweight. It's got a beautiful, very vibrant, colorful screen.
Yeah.
I love the little haptic touch you get on the buttons, a little vibrate sensation.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty decent.
It's a fine phone.
Yeah.
But it's not like this.
It's not this. No.
Yeah. And that's what they're competing against.
Why is it so difficult? This has been around now for nearly 2 years.
Well, no, it's been around for nearly a year. A year and a half.
Been around for nearly 18 months.
Yeah.
Why is it so difficult for someone to just do something that's as well built as that?
I don't know.
Why is that?
I'm not that guy.
I don't know. I don't understand it either.
Lawsuits?
Well, yeah.
I mean copying
cost.
The design. I mean just having something that feels as... Like the iPhone
cost.
4 just feels so solid
and
well
made. Some of it's cost, but honestly, there's a lot of margin in...
In
like
these,
yeah.
Right, so Apple has this unique supply chain type setup, right, that other companies just don't have.
Well, they also have some of the best industrial designers in the world, but that's not to say that the people at Samsung or Motorola or wherever else
can't
dream about things like these. The question is, the other side of it is that this is kind of a crazy design. Like, it is in a lot of ways, I still think that this is a bad design,
because
a glass back is ridiculous.
I don't like the glass back.
Yeah, there's a reason I have it in a case everywhere I go, and it is absolutely insane.
You can swap out the back. Yes.
Yes, I can swap out the back. My dad is never, ever going to swap out the back on his iPhone 4.
I know other people have different experiences. I've dropped my iPhone now, like, on concrete a few times, and the metal band has got a few little dings in it, but the glass has never been damaged.
But, I mean, the point is, there's only two... There's one way you can drop this. If it doesn't land on an edge, there's a really high potential of breaking.
Yes, that's true.
And it's... I mean, in that regard, it's... You know, good design is functional and pretty, and... This is not a functional design.
I don't understand these people that say, oh, my iPhone 4, it looks so beautiful that I've got to protect it. So, and the way they protect it is by putting a fucking hideous case on it.
A giant OtterBox or something, yeah. I don't get into that. Sorry, OtterBox,
you haven't used a case in months, Gary.
I had a bumper at first.
I still like the bumper. It's okay.
I had a bumper at first. I didn't like it because I like the metal
band. It saved me too because... I dropped it right here, and
look at that. You can see where it took the bullet,
and that's a shatter spot right there. You hit those corner edges.
Totally
every
shattered.
Time.
Not true. Look, I'll show you.
That's
mine.
Don't drop my phone.
There's
please.
Look. You can see the ding right
metal.
There.
Yeah.
If you hit the glass on the corner like that, almost every time, especially
the edge
back.
Of that glass, and it's. I bet it can show up on the. It would show up on the.
Oh yeah, we can do the. Hold on.
I put a bumper on mine right after antenna gate.
There you go.
It didn't really seem to do anything. And then since then, I've just had no case
right
on here at all.
It's a little
right
low res,
there,
but we're getting there.
You know, we're at 340 right
Switching
now. So
should we check in?
No. Well, we can do a check in. But I'm saying we talk about the ultrabooks a lot. I think it's time finally to break into these boxes.
Oh,
we are talking about phones.
Yeah, why are you
exactly.
not? How
it's
are you
amazing
not
to me that we resisted the temptation.
I'm opening to like a 2-hour segue away from the phone.
Hey, so we never talked about what we did on the way in.
Okay, let's go back to the very first story.
Hold on.
Aren't you like 10 minutes away from changing tape or something anyway?
That was much louder than I expected. Basically, I went and picked up Norm and Gary on the way in. That's pretty much it. Gary was stalking me on Follow My Friends and Family.
Yeah, we've all been using Follow My Friends.
Yeah, I've got that.
Find My Friends.
So we all signed up for Find My Friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a mistake.
Which is both awesome and a bit
it's
terrifying.
It's super creepy.
Super creepy.
But, I stand by what I said initially, that like any technology, it has capacity to be used for good or evil.
Of course.
Depending on how you choose to use it.
They give you that temporary thing. You can use temporary.
It has a lot of good features.
But disappear me
right.
switch.
If we're going to
when
Disneyland
or
the day or whatever.
Yeah, you say, disappear me, don't share with my friends.
Is that what you did last night when I was looking for you?
Yes, that's exactly what
you can make yourself invisible.
Why would you look? Don't look for me.
But it's kind of cool so that, let's say we're going to Disneyland and we want to keep track of each other.
Right.
We can set up a preset expiration date so that I don't have to remember to turn it off again.
Share it until 8 o'clock tonight.
Right, and then it'll automatically
switch off. Or somebody's coming back from the airport, you want to see if they're, whatever, you know.
It's still such a novelty right now. Like yesterday morning when I got off Muni, first thing I did was check where Will was, and we both checked
it's
independently.
It's a bit creepy.
And we both tweeted that Will was at Ceremony.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We make the assumption that he was doing shopping.
And then I bought pajamas for everybody.
Yeah.
No, I tweeted that I was buying shopping.
No, I didn't buy any pajamas. I just tweeted, making the assumption. I had to think about, is this something I want to share? Yeah, Will would be okay with
I don't care. Yeah. I mean, if you gave my home address, I'd be a little bummed out, but, you know. Yeah, it's weird technology. Like the Disneyland example is the good one, or the kids at the mall or whatever. I don't know how many people's kids have iPhones.
Yeah. But, this has been around in a product called Glimpse for a long time that was really good.
There's a thing called Near that I think does it even better, that it lets you attach context to location. So you can say, okay, these are the people I want to let know that I'm at home.
Oh, okay.
And these are the people I want to let know that I'm at the office and stuff like that, which is really neat, but nobody uses it, so it's kind of useless. Yeah. Latitude has done that for ages.
Yeah, Latitude is similar, except they don't have that nice little temporary stuff, and they don't have as many features.
Mm-mm.
Glimpse had the cool thing of, like, you know, it had all the temporary things, just track it for this much time. And the other thing was, if somebody doesn't have Glimpse, you could send them, you could say, oh, let this person track me till 5 o'clock today. Send it to this email address. Mm-hmm. They would get a link in the email address that would open up a web page that would have you on a map on the web page.
Oh, and they don't even have to sign in or anything like that.
Yeah, they don't have to have an app.
Yeah,
right?
Really
you just
good.
Get a unique link. So that's pretty cool.
Okay, so I'm opening the phone.
But still, everyone's just going to use
Wait, no, I'm not.
I think let's go back
let's
to the store. So you were driving, you drove us in this morning.
So I got off the freeway.
Yeah.
We didn't get off the freeway, but we were getting near your house. I sent a message to you and Gary at the same time. I sent
a message.
Almost to Norm's house.
Yep.
And
I'm like, dude,
and Gary's
I know.
I
can
know.
See where
I'm
you
watching.
Are.
Yeah. I was like, not at all creepy, dude.
Yeah.
Not at all creepy.
Well, you turn it off.
I could.
In terms of purchasing the phone, so we talked about this last week. You're staying on AT&T. You ordered it, pre-ordered it the first day it was available.
So I'm staying on AT&T because I literally converted my entire fucking family to AT&T.
Yep.
Hi, family.
So you're kind of, your family has shackled you.
Yeah, so my hubris is coming back to bite me in the ass because I wanted free long-distance calls to all my family.
Won't be the last time.
Hmm. And now I'm stuck. Okay. I've made poor choices.
I have not had such a problem with AT&T here in the last year.
It's gotten much, like,
it's
iPhone 3GS days were grim.
And where my house is, I get a good signal, like, at my house. Mm-hmm. I don't get dropped calls and stuff. So if I'm roaming around the city, it's sort of sketchy, but not really.
Yeah.
It's not so bad.
Yeah, same here. I have great reception in my house. I have actually a bad Verizon house.
Yeah.
And I want to stay grandfathered into an unlimited plan. You know, I have my rollover mint I'll never use, and more people I know use AT&T, so I have the free calls between them.
Yeah.
And I assume that with people switching to Verizon, like Gary, the load will be a little lighter.
Yeah, maybe. The thing
And also having Sprint as an extra carrier, it just spreads it all out a little bit.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how well it works.
Yeah,
on
me
Sprint.
Too. We've talked about that.
Gary, you're on Verizon. That is a black iPhone.
It is a black iPhone 4S.
So yesterday you had a personal crisis.
I ordered a black iPhone 4S like Will and many others. I stayed up late to order the phone as soon as the pre-order came
through
available.
The website
because you got to jump right on it, otherwise
absolutely.
You won't get in that first shipment. You know, we've been here many times before. We know how it works. All I knew for sure is that I wanted off AT&T.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sick of the drop calls, sick of the spotty network performance, sick of calls going straight to voicemail, just sick of AT&T in general. I'm out of contract with AT&T. I did a little bit of research and discovered that, you know, I think Verizon obviously is the winner in terms of the most robust voice network. And the 3G data speeds, even though AT&T is supposed to have faster data, again, faster data is no use to me if I can't get a fucking signal. So slow data is better than no data. I've had it up to here with shitty performance. I'm standing in the middle.
It's like you have rally signs planned out.
Oh, yeah. I've got
to stand outside the AT&T store with my slow data is better than no data.
All my mantras. I've had so many dropped business calls and things where I really didn't need, I really could have used service and AT&T couldn't provide it for me. So I've had it. I'm going to go. And again, I'm a little bit, right until the last minute, actually, I was a little bit nervous about jumping or kind of better the devil you know type thing. And who knew what Verizon was going to be
like. It's a tough decision. It's a big,
in the
big
end,
choice.
I felt like I would hate myself and feel like such a hypocrite after all the years of bitching about AT&T that I signed up for another 2 years. So, I'm done. This is going to be a Verizon activated phone.
But that wasn't your crisis.
The problem was.
Yeah, the problem is color.
Okay, so they made them available in black and white this year, and I went with the black.
Yep.
And
good
then
choice.
Almost immediately had buyer's remorse.
Nope.
And decided I wanted the white. Okay, so help me. Help me
black
out here.
Better.
Tell me why black was the right choice.
Because have you looked at the light ones?
Yeah, I think they look pretty cool.
They look good on the back. But the white surrounding your screen looks terrible.
Yeah. So what you want? Yeah. Is
can you
a
imagine
white
buying a TV
screen?
Where
people,
the bezel
was white?
People
have made
white.
It that point is you don't want. But the white iPad is okay, right? Isn't
no,
it?
No,
you don't like that either.
No, get the black white.
I love the white iPad because I read on it and I read with white text. So when I'm
okay.
reading,
see that looks pretty good to me.
You're wrong.
The black one looks better.
Look,
and
well, let's pull
go.
Up. Let's pull up a.
Look, that,
you know
looks,
what?
That looks good.
No, actually, it doesn't. Actually, I can kind of see that.
And also,
to me, you just made an argument for the black bezel.
Oh, man.
And I read almost
sad.
I read almost entirely like comics on my iPad.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
So and so it's the same sort of thing as video or something. You just
yeah.
want to lose.
In that case, the black bezel makes sense.
Yeah. Fades into the background.
Well, look, I'm willing to believe that part of the reason why I'm having this problem, like for example, I know in a restaurant, if I'm choosing between two things to eat, as soon as I make the order,
yep.
as soon as the waitress walks away, I should have got the other thing.
Yeah.
So I've got a sickness, a mental
Clearly,
sickness.
Clearly, the only solution is to get two.
That's what I told
Well, here's... Who do you think I am? Frankie Muniz?
I don't even know what that's from, but it's funny.
The problem is...
You
so
need a t-shirt.
My girlfriend, who had my hand-me-down 3GS...
Yeah, how's that working out
tired
for you, by the way?
I thought I was just going to give her the 4, but she's tired of being the hand-me-down person.
Uh-huh.
And she likes to take pictures, and obviously the much-improved camera on
precedent.
The 4S is a very compelling feature.
Yeah.
And even coming from the 3GS to the 4S is going to be a huge step up in taking pictures.
The camera's really great. We did a bunch of camera tests.
Oh, yeah, you guys got an early one.
We used Macworlds. Macworld got an early win. Jason Snell got an early win.
But
we have a whole like camera test setup thing for testing like cameras.
A battery of camera tests.
Yeah, for actual like cameras, and we do cell phones every now and then, and it's good. It's among the best. You know, this thing of it's better than any cell phone. No,
I mean the Nokia cameras are demonstrably better.
Yeah,
like,
and there's
big lenses.
There's
and the whole
a couple
yards.
Of other Android phones that have like really really nice cameras. I don't remember the exact models, but it's like you pick your top say 3 or 4 cell phone cameras out there. It's right.
But in terms of like not only the lens but the software, how fast the aperture, how fast the shutter is.
Yeah.
Now, I mean,
yep.
Apple says 1.1 seconds, and I mean people are saying that they spent so much engineering power reducing that time.
Yeah.
As much as possible.
Well, the larger thing is. If the pictures are usable for the things that you want to use them for, then it's a good camera, right?
Yep.
If you when you're talking about like a 3GS old point, you know, old feature phone cameras that you, literally you couldn't use it as a fucking buddy icon because the resolution and noise were so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then, especially like indoor shooting anything indoors is so bad. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you get to the iPhone 4, you get to something that has a reasonably fast sensor and a good lens, and all of a sudden you can shoot like in nightclubs and maybe not in nightclubs, but at least in a room like this without the lights on.
And it's interesting. I think this is something that consumers are becoming better educated about. For a long time, you know, we all were concerned about how many megapixels, and what we're learning now is what's more important is the quality of the sensor and the optics, and it's not all about megapixels.
We don't send megapixels to Mars, and those are the most important.
Yeah,
like we said, that's a 1 megapixel camera on those things.
Yeah,
but it's a really good 1 megapixel.
Yeah, it's
camera,
a giant, huge sensor in each. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So that's
So Gary, you're sticking with the black. You don't know yet.
Not so fast.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So here's the problem. My girlfriend, who as I said, she wants to get a 4S. Decided that she preferred the white, and she was able to own that. She's much more sensible than me and has a real working brain. She liked the white and said, I want the white one. And then I started going, well, maybe I want the white one because I'm a big baby. But I'd already locked in the order for the black. And the problem is, of course, if we both get white iPhones and we don't like cases, we're not going to put stickers on. They're going to get mixed
up. That's a problem.
So
right
there. Much better probably to have his and hers, black and white. They're not going to get mixed up.
You can also do slightly different cases.
But we're not going to put cases
on
them.
We're not going to do cases.
Oh.
We're not doing cases.
I don't
have a case.
Okay,
I never had a case on the 4.
What about Jelliskins and stuff? Those are great.
Hate all that shit.
No.
Jelliskins.
Made
right
a
one.
Bumper at best. But I've never seen a case on an iPhone 4
like
that made the phone
look better. I mean, I think the same case job is pretty nice.
No. Don't like it.
It doesn't make it look better, but it's minimal.
Yeah.
It's minimally offensive.
It's because it's
so
little.
What you're looking for. Yeah.
Be the master of your own destiny.
If I had to have a case on my phone, it would probably be that one. Because
right.
You know what? The whole point of it is they put a lot of engineering into making the phone as slim and as nice as possible. You don't want to bulk it up.
No,
with a
I
case.
Completely agree. That's why I think they shouldn't have done the glass back.
So I actually went as far as calling an Apple store guy.
Okay.
And said, if I were to bring this thing in unsealed,
you've got to be the best. They've got to love it when you call.
They love me.
I know.
I'm on a first name base with these guys.
Of course, we all are. I'm the guy with the red beard named Will.
I called them.
They're
and they
like,
said,
"Oh, hi, Will."
They said, "By all means, bring it in." And obviously, as long as we've got stock, and we don't have no idea what that is going to look like.
Good luck.
The dust settles over the weekend.
But I think I'm gonna. I think I'm gonna have to.
You, there's no
be
way.
A fucking grown up
there's
and
no
stick
way
with a
you
phone.
Will get to Monday without opening the box. There's no,
no, no
way.
I, no, I could do that. The problem is, which if I here's what I know about myself and my own psychoses that if I go and swap for the white one, I'm instantly going to start fretting about the black.
Yeah,
yeah. Think and of so, how much better the white's going to show scratches.
As I hear myself talking about it, the respect that I have for myself is just plummeting.
Which is already pretty low.
So it's borderline. I mean, it's already in the minus digits.
Yeah. So you're getting one of each, right? That seems like the ideal situation because then you have a black one, she has a white one. Well, maybe she looks at the black one and goes, oh, that's pretty good. Well, then you can take the white one.
They're getting different capacities. Gary's on 32.
Oh.
She's going to get a 16 white, which is probably going to be the hardest SKU to find.
Yes.
Again, we saw some of the initial information coming out of Apple stores this morning, like people just in lines anecdotally tweeting stuff.
Yeah.
They said, oh, my line is like every white model is out.
Yeah.
16 gig black is out.
Yeah.
So like 64 gig black is probably if you had to have one this weekend, that's probably the one that's going to be most in stock.
Yeah.
Most people don't need all that capacity.
No.
Most people.
No.
Although with that 1080p video, it's going to fill up real quick if you like to shoot
video. I'm thinking about 64 gig white.
That would be the one way to go.
Okay, so should we open the phone?
Yes.
Shall we?
Open all right,
phone?
Yeah.
Can I open my damn phone? People are really dying in the chat. I'm going to move the camera.
Yeah, we haven't
here.
Talked about Siri at all. So we're 352. Do we want to do Mad Libs while Will does this?
Oh, God. Do we want to do
Mad
Libs?
No, we're all about. I just tweeted that we're doing an unboxing, so we kind of have to follow
Siri. Will Siri give you words? Like, can you say, Siri, what? Give me an adjective?
Oh make man. Siri do Ooh. Mad Libs?
Oh, that'd be great.
Siri adverb.
This is going to be internet first. Make Siri do Mad Libs.
A real disaster. Okay, I'm moving my
You need
my
to open them quickly before somebody.
Out of the way. Yeah, this is going out live, you know. Hey, don't move my water away, yo. Okay, so this is the phone. I hate unboxings just in general.
It looks just like an iPhone.
It's really lame.
It is. It looks like the iPhone, the Verizon version.
Yeah,
I can't use my old case,
so apart
right?
from a couple of minor changes bucks? On the antenna band, it's the exact
it's
same
exact
design.
Same.
Oh,
boom,
so sexy.
Boom. Plastic
look,
off.
Look at the camera. Look.
This looks exactly like the old one. You can tell fingerprints, no fingerprints. Yeah. Camera looks the same. I can't see the extra element in the lens. My case...
Chat is strongly in favor of black, it seems like. I said black or white.
Old case almost works. I can do a little bit of carving and probably save $35.
Now, is there any difference in the positions of the switches or anything?
Yeah, it looks like the
mute switch looks like it's a little bit lower.
Yeah, a little bit lower.
The volume buttons are the same?
The universal cases that worked on the Verizon ones should be fine.
This is one that I got.
My bumpers, though, I think, are pre-Verizon bumpers. So if I were to use a bumper, I'd have to get it.
I'm going to turn this thing on.
I'll carve it out.
Yeah, I mean, I could fix that with a pair of wire snips in about 2 seconds, it seems like.
So turning on.
Hey, it's still the Apple logo.
Yeah. You know, what's the story behind that particular Apple logo? It's the same for the iPad and iPhone. When I first turned on the iPhone 1, you know, 4 years ago, I was like, there's got to be a scratch on my screen because it has that line through that.
Yeah. Well, that swipe, it's the same thing they do in all the photos. They do that color swipe.
Yeah.
So they do the reflection. It's like a horizon line in the reflection.
Okay, it's an interesting design.
Booting.
But they don't do that on the
they
on
don't
the
do it for anything
Macs
else.
When they boot up and stuff.
It's so. Just for iOS.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. So what's going on? What are you into these days, Jason? Anything you want to plug while you're here?
Just playing video games.
No, not plug. I mean, yeah.
Well, you know.
You don't need.
Well, you're on Twitter.
Yeah.
Jason Cross Zero.
I'm Jason Cross 00.
Zero, zero.
Two zeros.
There was already a Jason Cross zero?
Well, no, I just figured.
Once you go for zero.
Well, you're setting up your phone. Now, we did this in the iOS 5 quick look. Setting up your phone now.
Yeah, don't need the PC.
No, because the old iPhone's the first thing that would do is tell you to plug it in iTunes.
Yeah.
So we don't have to do that
post-PC
anymore.
Post-PC era my ass, right?
Yeah, this is not post-PC when you have to plug it in the PC first.
Right. So this is, it's a lot easier. It's faster.
I'm joining.
So yeah, Jason Cross 00 on Twitter, Google Plus, and
PCWorld.com
for all my stuff. Although I spend most of my time editing other people's stuff these days, assigning and editing articles to other
isn't
people.
That's just the way it is, though.
It's just the way it is. So I don't write a lot, not as much as I used to. But that's all right.
I think I lost something that's important to me.
Well, where'd my Jason C on go? Xbox Live, but you'll never. My friends list is full. So
how are you liking I'm Google sorry. Plus? I see you're fairly active on there. I've had a real kind of up and down love-hate relationship with it.
It's much better for having conversations with people.
I agree.
Threaded
conversations, and I've had some replies that people have said where it would have blown past the word limit of, you know, the character limit for Facebook or whatever. And it's a worthwhile thing they said. It's like, well, thank you, Google, for letting this. But they have no platform. It's the problem. Like, Facebook is useful as a platform that other people can develop on and use for logins and for, you know. There is no – the API for Google Plus is like pull your stream. It's there is no – there's nothing, right? So it's a terrible platform, but it's a really great place to go have threaded conversations with people.
Did you read that post by the Google engineer, the Google Plus – or the Google engineer about platform, the Steve Yagi post the other
day? He was spot on, though.
Yeah, he's exactly right.
Yeah.
Like it was the best normal guy explanation of why platforms are important of anything I've ever read. And what you realized about two-thirds of the way through the article is that he was talking about what do you call it? He was talking about S3 and EC2 and all the Amazon web services stuff that they've done. They switched to kind of in a blaze of glory 5 or 6 years ago, 4 years. It seems like forever ago, but it was probably not that long ago.
Yeah.
It's a really good post. It's still on my crotch. I don't know why that
is. All these people that have responded to my tweet to check out the live unboxing of the iPhone 4S are just looking at your pants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're nice pants.
What about
Did I just put my phone number out? Did I just put my phone number out on the internet?
Oh, no.
Time for a new recording podcast segment thing.
Okay, I thought that was the phone ringing.
No, that would be the worst ringtone ever.
Jeff Gerstmann is due to join us just about
in just a minute.
Yeah. Make sure he sits over on the side.
I gotta say, we have something really exciting happening here.
Will just gave out his cell number.
Did I?
Did you really?
I don't think I did. They say it was too blurry to read.
Oh. Hold on, I'll type it in. Sorry.
No, fuck off. Don't do that.
Zoom and enhance.
Oh, set up as new iPhone.
That new Photoshop feature, right? Yes.
That is amazing.
Unblur.
Cool. De-blur. Yeah. Yes.
From the teaser. Oh, I wish I was at Max.
If that's in CS6, will we be able to
de-blur license plates like on CSI now? Is that the magic of it?
Sort of.
Kind of. It was a neat video.
I still think Content Aware, Phil, is one of the best things ever.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very
That's
cool.
magic.
Yeah. This is another magic thing. Wow.
So I should set this up as a new phone, right?
You should set up as a new phone.
Damn it.
You shouldn't have all your... I mean, you can
get stuff from iCloud later.
I'm going to be restoring mine from iCloud.
You're not supposed to restore from one generation to another is what several anonymous Apple store
Does. That's not what Gary means. Gary means he'll be syncing his information from iCloud.
Yeah, that's different.
No, not restoring. I did an iCloud backup.
Yes. No, you don't want to do that. You don't want to back up what... We talked about this in the podcast last week.
This is semantics.
No. The thing that you do not want to do is back up from one generation of phone and restore to another, because it saves a whole bunch of weird behind-the-scenes settings that nobody ever knows
are
there.
So I should definitely not unbox this. I should wait until I get home and sync it from the phone?
You think is right.
Your information, the contacts, if on your current iPhone 4, you set up iCloud, so it sends your address, your contacts, and you can get that from iCloud on your phone without doing a full, quote-unquote, restore.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah,
I can just set it up as a new phone and then do an iCloud.
Yes,
pull down the backup
stuff. Sync.
Okay, I get it now. Right, I get it.
Okay, I am done setting up.
Now, how is your AT&T activation? Because a lot of people were having trouble earlier today.
Timing was right.
It just hit just immediately. No problem.
So you're activated.
Yeah, less than 3 minutes.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. So I mean, my guess is that they added capacity. Anyway, we're
let's four. Go. We're 4 hours.
Jason,
should we? Yeah.
Thanks for coming by, Jason. I was going to gracefully do this.
It was a very fast hour.
Yeah, these hours are going very fast. I feel like we're only 21 hours away from...
Is Jeff going to announce the endurance run in the next hour?
That's the word on the street, is that we're going to find out what the next giant bomb endurance run is.
Wow.
It's not Dark Souls. That's all I know. So,
all you know is
I actually
Dark Souls,
do know what it is.
I know what it is.
I know what it is.
But I told you all this morning.
I'm going to keep it top secret.
Thanks for putting my lie out in public for everyone to see.
Thanks so much, Jason.
Yeah, thanks for coming by. Thanks for bringing the Ultra Book.
Yeah, and I actually should get you guys down to come do our podcast.
Yeah, that'd be rad.
Our podcast is really short.
Okay,
we can do half an hour.
That's
we're in and out like nothing.
Half an hour is when we're like before the
yeah. We've just started warming up at a half
yeah,
hour.
Yeah, that's after like we talk about clothes and
We get right into it.
You get right to content.
We're in and out.
Okay,
we have all these professionals who have like
interesting.
Just their like just their. I just want to hear it on my commute and be done.
It might be time for me to break the seal.
Also we're
for Will, that. Are you resetting the stream recording?
Right, I am going to restart the stream.
And he comes in.
That might be perfect for a Siri demo.
Thanks for coming by, Jason. Sorry, we're getting a little crazy. Jason Cross, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for coming by. We got, it looks like Patrick and Ryan up next.
No, Jeff is up next.
Jeff is on the list, but Patrick and Ryan are the ones talking about the thing that they're going to be doing that is about enduring.
Are you going to fuck me with the seating?
No.
Okay.
They're not both, one can sit on one side, one can sit on the other. There's a potential for a reset. Did you guys tweet that this is happening so that people will come? I was
nope.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Good talk. Thanks, guys. Thanks for the support. I'm going to mute both of your microphones, you fucking assholes. Hold on, I got to. So I've got to stop and start.
Have fun with the rest of your 24-hour podcast.
Now anything
sounds
we say.
Sounds like someone needs a little black blood of the earth.
I could actually use some right now.
I'm waiting until 6 o'clock.
Ryan, this stuff is amazing. Right? I have focus and clarity like I've never experienced before.
It's not just
life.
There is such a crash coming.
Okay.
Well, there is. I'll tell you, there is a crash.